Sedition is defined specifically in U.S. law as a federal crime involving conspiracy to overthrow or destroy by force the government of the United States, or to oppose by force the authority thereof, or by force to prevent, hinder, or delay the execution of any law of the United States. Seditious conspiracy is a specific crime that requires two or more persons conspiring to use force against the U.S. government or its laws.
Our laws are clear. You can refuse illegal orders.
You can refuse illegal orders.
You must refuse illegal orders.
No one has to carry out orders that violate the law or our Constitution.
We know this is hard and that it's a difficult time to be a public servant.
But whether you're serving in the CIA,
the Army,
or Navy,
the Air Force,
your vigilance is critical.
And know that we have your back.
Because now, more than ever,
the American people need you.
Of course, absent from the Declaration, any specifics as to what those illegal orders actually are.
And the question you have to ask yourself is, what is their intent? What is the reason that they all went on a video and encouraged young men and women to defy court orders without even giving a hint of what's illegal, without even giving any suggestion of what law or what order they're being asked to violate?
To be clear, we are not calling on folks right now to debate, to disobey any type of unlawful order.
Have you, Congresswoman, or any other of these Democratic members of Congress heard directly from members of the U.S. military or the broader national security community who believe they've been given unlawful orders?
Well, you know, what I'd say is I have heard from service members, and this is all a matter of public record. What we see is an uptick of concern from the men and women who are serving in uniform about the legality of orders that are being given.
They would be violating their oath if they followed illegal orders.
And I guess, Senator, members of the military, what is your advice to them if they come across something that seems confusing?
I think they need to talk to their leadership, you know, talk to their commanding officer about it and tell your commanding officer why you think this may be illegal. There are lawyers within the military, the Judge Advocate General Corps. You can have a conversation, you know, with somebody who understands the law. You know, there's always the option of you review the UCMJ with your leadership and you explain to somebody why you think this may not be lawful.
After widespread discontent over unpaid wages, lack of food and clothing erupted into open revolt, yes, George Washington, as commander-in-chief during the Revolutionary War, authorized the execution of his own soldiers for sedition in 1781. However, no one in U.S. history has ever been executed by hanging or any other means solely for sedition or seditious conspiracy under federal law. Historical cases involving the executions of John Brown in 1859, Mary Surratt in 1865, and William Bruce Mumford in 1862 were prosecuted under different charges like treason or martial law violations. Neither the 1798 or 1918 Sedition Acts, the 1940 Smith Act, nor the current federal seditious conspiracy statute, 18 U.S. Code 2384, has ever carried the death penalty. The current maximum penalty for seditious conspiracy is 20 years in prison, and that is what needs to be pursued without fail, or there is no executive office of the United States going forward. Throughout American history, six presidents have presided over the federal prosecution and imprisonment of individuals for sedition or seditious conspiracy. John Adams, Abraham Lincoln, Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, George W. Bush, and Joe Biden, whose Justice Department convicted at least 18 Oath Keepers and Proud Boy leaders for their roles in January 6th, the most extensive use of the seditious conspiracy statute since World War II. And then there is the turbo sedition waged against President Trump for the past decade. The FBI's Russiagate investigation was branded a seditious conspiracy. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander.
We are live, still on air, despite all the admissions of the CIA, the FBI, the DOJ. Hundreds of millions of dollars spent trying to shut us down. But despite that, because you, the activist audience in the arena, stood with us with your word of mouth, your prayer, and your financial support, we have not only persevered, we have not only overcome, but we have dominated.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. Visit InfoWars.com today.
The spirit of victory lives in InfoWars. And InfoWars is more than a URL. It is more than this building. It is the people of America and the world becoming awake and standing up and rising and demanding liberty and freedom in the animating contest in the war against the tyrants.
The future may hold. InfoWars will always live forever. The fights will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and at AJN Live. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to alexjonesapp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
I know y'all are tired of me talking about this, but let's talk about methylene blue.
Methylene blue?
Methylene blue.
Methylene blue.
I have shared the methylene blue with my crew.
Buy it before it's banned, because I just found another use for it after the bloody wart. It removed my face. I fell down the other day and scraped up my leg, and I added some of the liquid stuff here, the methylene blue. Stopped the bleeding, alleviated the pain, and then I put a Band-Aid over it, and now it's healed up on, you know, faster. So they don't buy it before it's banned, y'all.
That's crazy. I love how everybody in the InfoWars audience just buys methylene blue and just starts doing science experiments.
Well, it's known that it has topical applications to it, right? You talk about the wart. Other people have talked about, you know, like maybe stomach issues here and there, other things. It has antimicrobial properties, but only really to gram-negative bacteria. So only really the bad things involved.
So there you go.
Oh, one more thing, y'all. I haven't slept 8 hours without urinating since I was like 20. This stuff is, I don't have to go every 5 minutes. I'm like a 20-year-old as far as my prostate goes.
Very interesting. Thank you for the call, Bart.
I'm really proud of the Alex Jones store. You know, when Bigley came in at first, I didn't really know what to think of it, but I saw the products they came out with, and they're willing to work with me, and I really got to have fun with them, and I got to bring some cool things to market, like methyl drive and power plant specifically, I'm very proud of. You know, it's been a blast to get to work with Bigley. They work with some of the best supplement manufacturers in the country, and what I've been able to do with them is we've really been able to come out with a lot of these new blends that really are effective for people and have efficacious doses without the blend, without the fillers, without kind of, you know, lower quality mixtures used to getting at certain places. It's been really incredible to work with Bigley.
Again, thank you so much. Check out the alexjonesstore.com today, and I thank you for keeping us on the air.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug the Irish Sea Moss. Was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of, like, thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. Hmm. All that stopped with the sea moss because it's a thyroid issue, and the sea moss has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The methylene blue. Yeah, the methylene blue, life-changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. Like, it's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I love his self-supplement formula. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together. And they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good.
You can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Methylene Red is the ultimate complement to Methylene Blue. It's like Batman and Robin, right? This is Robin. Okay, I just took this, and I only took three droppers full. And I feel like calm energy, if that makes sense. I feel like if I want to go think about something or go deep into something, I can do that right now. It's like a sour warhead, and it's like, oh my God. And then I'm like, oh wow, okay, I actually feel it. Same way you feel methylene blue, you feel this. So
look at this, look at this.
Here's your normal methylene blue, right? Look at methylene red.
Dude, that's a freaking tank. If you're taking this, you really need this. It's like, you know how Big Pharma always tells you, hey, if you get, you know, this SSRI, you're going to need this to go with it. Well, this is the natural, more natural way to do it. You got methylene blue and you got methylene red. These complement each other and you need both of them. Go to thealexjonesstore.com today and get yours. And I think right now it's 50% off if you subscribe.
Is supportive of the Department of War's investigation into Senator Mark Kelly. And I think what Senator Mark Kelly was actually trying to do was intimidate the 1.3 million active duty service members who are currently serving in our United States Armed Forces with that video that he and his Democrat colleagues put out. Senator Mark Kelly well knows the rules of the military and the respect that one must have for the chain of command, and that all lawful orders are presumed to be legal by our service members. You can't have a functioning military if there is disorder and chaos within the ranks, and that's what these Democrat members were encouraging. It's very clear. And not a single one of them, since they've been pressed by the media, and I'll give you guys credit for that, can point to a single illegal order that this administration has given down, because it does not exist. They knew what they were doing in this video, and Senator Mark Kelly and all of them should be held accountable for that. No, because Lindsey Callaghan was legally appointed, and that's the administration's position. I know there was a judge who was clearly trying to shield Letitia James and James Comey from receiving accountability, and that's why they took this unprecedented action to throw away the indictments against these two individuals. But the Department of Justice will be appealing very soon, and it is our position that Lindsey Callaghan is extremely qualified for this position, but more importantly, was legally appointed to it.
Steve.
Is President Zelensky going to come to the United States this week? Are there a couple of points? You mentioned on the Fox News a couple of points.
Yeah. So there are no plans at this moment in time. As you know, things can change very quickly around here, so we'll keep you all apprised, but there's no meeting scheduled right now. As for where we are, I spoke with Secretary Rubio at length. I spoke with the president as well. Everybody inside feels optimistic about what happened and transpired yesterday in Geneva. Secretary Rubio, Special Envoy Witkoff, the whole team really worked through the points of that 28-point peace plan that the United States authored with input from both sides, the Russians and the Ukrainians, and ultimately, the vast majority of these points have been agreed upon. The Ukrainians have worked on language with us together, and you heard that from their delegation directly yesterday. So we feel as though we're in a very good place. Of course, we have to make sure that all of these points are agreed to, and then, of course, we're going to have to make sure the other party in this war, the Russians, agree to them as well. But I think the president deserves a great deal of credit for the amount of energy and effort he's put into trying to bring these two sides to an end of this war. He wants to see this killing stop. As for any deadlines, he wants to see this end as soon as possible.
Is the president more determined to go after Tish James and James Comey?
Go ahead.
Is the president more determined to go after Tish James and James Comey?
Excuse me. I'm answering a question from you.
You looked at me. I'm sorry.
I turned and looked at you because you're yelling. I will take a question from your colleague, and then I'll take your question, too. Okay? Go ahead.
I don't want to detail sort of the technical talks that are happening right now, but there are just a couple, and we're confident that we'll be able to work through those.
The president's been putting a lot of pressure on both leaders for this entire time. We've been talking with both sides. He's been talking to both leaders directly for 10 months now. So, yes, you can expect that pressure to continue. The president wants this war to end.
Caroline, is the president more determined now since the judge's ruling today to go after James Comey and Tish James? And if so, why?
I wouldn't say he's going after them. I think the president is more determined than ever to see accountability in this country, yes, and to correct the wrongs of the weaponization
deterioration of our justice system that we saw under the previous administration and Joe Biden.
Okay, well, let's go to Venezuela. Are we entering a new phase of Venezuela, and what does that entail?
Well, as the president is so good at, I'll try to be just as good. I'm not going to broadcast any actions that may or may not be happening with respect to Venezuela. I know I've been very clear about the administration's position, as has the president and his national security team. We view the Maduro regime as being illegitimate, and the president has been very satisfied with the successful strikes against narco-terrorists and foreign terrorists that are illegally trafficking drugs towards the United States of America. He's not going to tolerate that, and you can expect to see those strikes continue.
What was President Trump's reaction to those indictments against Romy and James being thrown out?
His reaction was, we've seen this before. We've seen partisan judges take unprecedented steps to try to intervene in accountability before, but we're not going to give up. And I know that the Department of Justice intends to appeal these rulings very soon, if they haven't already. I may have missed it.
Well, Caroline, one question on Venezuela. Is there any plan, meeting for this week on Venezuela? And another one, a clarification on this weekend, because the president was asked about the former Brazilian president being arrested, and he mentioned that he spoke with this gentleman. Did he speak with Bolsonaro the day before he was arrested?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know if that call took place or not. It may have. I can get you a firm answer on that, Raquel. I know it's of great importance to you for your reporting. As for meetings on Venezuela, there's meetings on a range of topics inside this building all of the time. And the president is constantly apprised of what's going on in the world, what's going on in the news, and he's very well written into all of the things that his team are working on.
You would not go into the sticking points of the disagreement between the two parties in the Ukraine peace process, but how flexible is the president in coming to a deal, and will the Europeans be part of a final negotiation response?
I think he's been quite flexible already. We've been watching this war go on for 10 months. He's talked to both leaders countless times. Our team has engaged with both the Russians and the Ukrainians extensively. As I said, there is a sense of urgency. The president wants to see this deal come together, and he wants to see this war end.
I wanted to ask you, is it MAGA to support American workers being replaced with H-1B visa holders? Are Americans not capable of filling most of these positions?
Who supports getting American workers getting replaced?
I know the president mentioned that he wanted to bring in some workers that he could eventually send back in regards to...
The president does not support American workers being replaced. You are mischaracterizing what the president said. The president wants to see our American manufacturing industry be revitalized better than ever before. That's part of what he's doing with his effective use of tariffs and cutting good trade deals around the world. That's why he's recruited trillions and trillions of dollars in investments into our country. Those are creating good-paying American jobs right here at home. As for the H-1B visa issue, the president has a very nuanced and common sense opinion on this issue. He wants to see if foreign companies are investing trillions of dollars in the United States of America, and they're bringing foreign workers with them to create very niche things like batteries. He wants to see that at the beginning to get those manufacturing facilities and those factories up and running. But ultimately, the president always wants to see American workers in those jobs. And he's told these foreign companies that are investing here, you better be hiring my people if you're going to be doing business in the United States. So there's been a lot of misunderstanding of the president's position. Michael.
Is President Trump asking for Xi Jinping's help and putting pressure on Putin to help him with more?
I won't get into the details of the conversation this morning other than what the president put out on Truth Social. He put out his own readout of that, and I will leave it to that. But I did speak with him about the call. It lasted about an hour, and it was a very positive call. The focus of the call was really Russia-Ukraine did come up, but the focus was mainly on the trade deal that we are working on with China and those relations and how they are moving in a positive direction. President also addressed our farmers, and we are pleased with what we've seen from the Chinese, and they feel the same way. And the president and President Xi discussed continuing to stay in correspondence following their very productive meeting in South Korea.
Ukraine, does the progress that you just laid out change the Thanksgiving Day deadline for Ukraine to come to an agreement, or does the president still want something
more definitive by Thursday. And then on the Comey and James case, does the president still have confidence in the Medallion?
Absolutely, he does, to your second question. As for your first question, with respect to the deadline, the president wants to see this deal come together as quickly as possible, and he trusts that his team is doing everything they can to get it over the finish line.
Does the president support Israel's elimination of Hezbollah chief of staff Ali Takhtai yesterday, and is he in favor of Israel blocking Hezbollah from growing again?
I haven't spoken to the president about that strike specifically, but of course the president supports Israel's right to defend itself and to take out any terrorist threats in the region. Jake?
If the president does announce that
I know there's been a lot of reporting on this from yourself as well, Jake, over the last few days. I will tell you that healthcare is a topic of discussion that's happening very frequently and robustly inside the West Wing right now. The president's very much involved in these talks, and he's very focused on unveiling a healthcare proposal that will fix the system and will bring down costs for consumers. As for the details of those discussions, I'll let the president speak for himself. As you all know, sometimes you report things and then President Trump comes out with an announcement, and those things are not always true from what you hear from sources inside the building. So I'll let the president speak for himself. Sure, go ahead, Kara.
President Trump said he still thinks he's a fascist and a despot after they had the free meeting. Any comment from the White House on that?
I think talk is cheap, and I think that the president is going to judge Mamdani by his actions that he takes to New York. The meeting was positive, as you heard from the president last week, and I think the fact that the president is willing to meet with somebody who said those types of things about him shows that he really is interested in being a president for all Americans, regardless of where they live or who their leader is. He wants what's best for New York. He loves New York City. He helped build the skyline. He spent his whole life there, and so he really wants to see New York do well. And so that's how that meeting played last week.
Caroline.
John.
Thanks a lot, Caroline. There are a few Republican senators who are critical of the 28-point peace plan, including Senator Rounds, Senator Graham, Senator McConnell. What do you say to those senators who say that this is giving too much away to Russia? And has Russia made any concessions as it relates to a possible peace deal concerning ending the war in Ukraine?
I would point any critics to the words of the Ukrainians yesterday, in which they said that they feel very positive about this plan. They've been very involved. They have had direct input on the language of this plan, and that we are in direct communication and correspondence with them. Any idea, let me just finish with this, the idea that the United States of America is not engaging with both sides equally in this war to bring it to an end is a complete and total fallacy. And I saw a lot of misinformation and rumors and allegations against people in this building, such as Secretary Rubio and Special Envoy Wyckoff and the president himself, that they are favoring one side over the other. That could not be further from the truth. I have watched as the president and his team have worked around.
You're listening to The War Room with Kristan T. Harris, and we want to bring the best to you immediately, letting you guys know how you can support this broadcast. Head on down to check out some of the great deals we have at the Alex Jones store. Right now, we have our Black Friday spiel taking off. You can save some money on the currently on all supplements are currently buy one, get one free, as well as 25% off of all apparel. Today's broadcast, we're going to have a great show today. Drew Arnold will be joining us. We're going to be diving into the Epstein files, as well as Kristen, Megyn Kelly. We're going to talk about the division of the GOP and what's happening there. We also have Don Vi Jr. We're going to be diving into the Venezuela drug cartel issue, and we have Zoltan Istvan joining us. So it should be a great program today on today's broadcast, and it should be rather interesting because it all started quite a few years ago when I was covering the Ghislaine Maxwell Jeffrey Epstein trial, and I was doing some correspondence work, not just for the BBC, but for Alex Jones here at InfoWars and the guys here. From the front gates of the Ghislaine Maxwell Jeffrey Epstein trial, and we went through the whole 5 weeks together. So we have a lot to cover today. We're going to be diving in some data. Drew Arnold is a very interesting individual, and he's going to be diving into all of these House leaks that have been brought, all the data surrounding these emails and pumping it into an AI system to bring us some results of some connections. And I think a lot of that will be going on and tying into what Alex was talking about earlier with all of these banker connections, the Israel connections with Epstein, and a whole bunch more. That being said, it all kind of started with this question on clip one I asked of Thomas Massie. If you guys could go ahead and roll clip one.
Thomas Massie, what's some of the kickback you're getting back from your colleagues? What are some reasons why they don't want to endorse this?
Not right now.
Okay. They're being threatened. I mean, look, I've got $2 million of ads running against me back in my district, and it's funded by three billionaires. One of them's in Epstein's black book. I mean, this is what happens. Your consultants, your political consultants will abandon you when the White House gets mad at you. The Speaker will block all of your bills. They'll shut down your fundraising. This isn't political, but it is. I mean, the opposition to this is very political.
There was Thomas Massie answering a question I asked him a couple weeks ago at the press conference by the victims of Jeffrey Epstein about why his Republican constituents were not supporting a bill to free the Epstein files. And here we are, fast forward, and he monstered and muscled that bill, getting it passed and defeating the government and the establishment. Essentially, him, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Ro Khanna, these individuals have really taken on this battle, and we've been waiting patiently for these answers. It was Donald Trump that ran on the whole idea here that he's going to release all of these files. We're going to find out who these pedophiles are, who these scumbags are who are degrading children and using it as extortion, and the people involved. But what is preventing this information from coming out? And who are the people that are at the center of this? Joining us here today is Drew Arnold. Drew Arnold is an expert AI developer. He's done some editing, amongst other things. He's worked for CGI with names like Beyonce and Kanye West. And I think I saw recently Lady Gaga was on his list of individuals he's worked with as far as CGI creation. Drew Arnold, welcome to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us today. Let's talk a little bit about what inspired you to go through this and what is it that you're doing? Because you're developing an AI system that scrapes the internet, but now can also scrape files and connect people together so we can see kind of a real-time data info spectrum of the layout of how these inner workings are going within these organizations and the connections of people. So let's start here. First of all, let our listeners know a little bit about you and what is it that you are doing?
Yeah, thanks, Chris Don. So I come from a 3D animation background. I've worked in media, worked with Kanye, Beyonce, Lady Gaga, done a lot of really high-tech things from projection mapping, 3D scanning, motion capture, VR, AR, everything you can imagine. And for a long time, I've really kind of been quiet about my political interests, which have been sort of the intersection of power and everything you can't see. So, you know, I've read a lot of books. There's been a lot of investigations that have been done that you read about. And I've always wanted to connect the dots because you'll read one book, you'll read a news report, you'll read an investigative report, and they all kind of have different outlooks on things. And even though there's a lot of truth and a lot of citations, there's no way to connect the dots because it's too complicated for a book, too complicated for a documentary, too complicated for a website. So I wanted to bring what I was doing in 3D animation, and visualize what was happening in sort of the shadows or the penumbra of things that we might see. And, you know, up until recently, it wasn't even possible because a lot of it was manual data entry. You had to enter this stuff in by hand, which I wasn't going to do. I had better things to do with my time, and frankly, that wasn't going to make me any money. But now with
unbelievably
the aid of AI,
it's pretty crazy, like, to think about, first of all, that we had a hand enter everything, and now everyone just uses AI to scrape the internet. But before we dive into all this, we're going to be heading to commercial break here. But Drew Arnold is our guest. We're going to be going into the deep cuts here with the Epstein files, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this when we come back from break. Don't go anywhere.
This is the biggest show we ever run. It runs until Friday. Listen to this. Listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. Buy any supplement and get any other supplement you want free. If you can buy a supplement that's $20, and get one that's $40 for free. Did you hear that? That is insane. And there's a bunch of other specials running on top of it. We have an 80%+ reorder. Only some of us, people love them so much. But I'm trying to get those of you out there that are on the fence, 99% of you, to go there and experience Irish Sea Moss. We got the strongest, best. Experience our turmeric. It's the best. The products are so good. Our ultramethylene blue, our Shilajit, our Irish Sea Moss, our spike protein, pro cardiovascular, super formula, ultimate line for us. Experience it all. This is game-changing. Also, site-wide, 25% off on all apparel. All these new incredible designs of T-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, Christmas designs, you name it. It's all there. We will continue to fight. We'll never give up or back down or sell out, but we could give out without your support. So I want to salute those that have supported and humbly ask those that haven't. Are we not the tip of the spear? Are we not changing the world? I need your support. Plus, these are great products. This is a win-win. So get in here right now. We need your help. They have appointed a state receiver to shut us down. We've basically exhausted everything in court. The receiver from the state court says he's going to try to have an auction, but we don't know. It could be 2 weeks from now, a month from now, but they say we should be closed by early January. Okay? Well, here's the deal. We have the Alex Jones Backup Network. That's funded by thealexjonesstore.com. But also, thealexjonesstore.com is funding InfoWars. Because if they have a real auction and the good guys are able to buy it, if they actually do that, unlike what happened in federal court, we'll stay here and it'll be great. So this is like we're on death row here. Do we get the reprieve again? So that's the struggles. That's why supporting us now at this critical moment is more important than ever. Plus, the products are insanely good. Just do your Christmas shopping early with us. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And everybody that's going to buy anything is going to be a VIP. It's not even a commitment. You cancel any time for free. You get $30 to be a VIP each month. $40 instantly each month to spend the store. Special deals, special offers, special sales. Everybody should be a VIP. You just get special offers and special deals and $40 for $30. So you make $10 on your first purchase right there. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Thanks for your support.
Step right up and behold a creation so powerful, so potent, it could only come from my secret vitality factory. Shilajit Gummies. Packed with ancient minerals and super-infused goodness, these little squares of power will boost your day faster than a fizzy lifting drink. Need that spark of pure imagination? Pop one of these into your mouth and feel the natural energy flow right through you. Visit thealexjonesstore.com.
We are live, still on air, despite all the admissions of the CIA, the FBI, the DOJ, hundreds of millions of dollars spent trying to shut us down. But despite that, because you, the activist audience in the arena, stood with us with your word of mouth, your prayer, and your financial support, we have not only persevered, we have not only overcome, but we have dominated.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. Visit InfoWars.com today.
The spirit of victory lives in InfoWars. And InfoWars is more than a URL. It is more than this building. It is the people of America and the world becoming awake and standing up and rising and demanding liberty and freedom in the animating contest in the war against the tyrants.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Our guest today is Drew Arnold. Drew Arnold is diving into the Epstein files with us. We're trying to get into the deep cuts about some of these links we're finding through the House leaks that were dropped by the Congressional House and the deep cuts on the Jeffrey Epstein tying into people like you had Barack, Putin, Rothschilds, Peter Thiel, and a whole bunch more. Drew Arnold, well, thank you again for joining us today. And we were talking a little bit about what it is that you're doing, how AI can just scrape the internet, how back in the day you would have to enter all this data, but now AI can do a lot of the research for you. And let's continue on discussing the direction you were going with this and how you were able to actually get some of this data into the algorithms. And what we're trying to accomplish here is to develop a connection between all the people Epstein is associated with, excuse me.
Yeah. So I've built kind of a forte on the back of being able to process data in a very specific way. And I've had some really interesting stories come out that show the entire chain of connection for the depopulation network, where Wuhan Labs got its start, how it got its funding, and what it turned into, everything from the beginning of Doge and who was actually behind it, not Elon Musk, and all kinds of other things. I mean, I think these stories are really interesting, and I really wanted to apply the same methodology to Jeffrey Epstein. It's a massive story that's probably bigger than anything else out there. Are we going to get to the bottom of what Jeffrey Epstein was and what he was actually doing? And if we're not going to get the data directly from the source, can we infer data? Can we build around it and kind of scrape together a bigger picture based on events, actions, locations, seeing where people are traveling, what overlaps, right? So I have a project called Invisible Inquiry, where you can go and see this data. I'm going to release a couple of products I'm going to tell you about later that visualize these connections, so that way you can see the chain of citations and how everything is connected. So if you think about two nodes, two dots that connect to one another, that through a relationship, that is a very simple version of what I'm doing. And then subsequently, you can put millions of those connections together to showcase all kinds of different ways to present data, timelines, maps, all kinds of stuff. So this project is a big data project. It's an investigative research project that rides on the back of many other people who've been doing this really hard work of putting this data together. And I'm compiling it all for you to see.
Well, what's really interesting here is the names that we might see. We got a clip here. Clip two, roll clip two.
Do you believe Netanyahu's involvement with Trump is influencing the decision of the Epstein file release?
I think Israel is influencing the Epstein file release because Israeli intelligence and our own CIA was wrapped up with Epstein. And so it would be embarrassing to our own intelligence agencies as well as Israel's intelligence agencies for all that to come out.
We have a problem with foreign governments, the British.
And that was the clip there. It's pretty interesting that Thomas Massey discusses the Israeli intelligence and the Israeli links, Drew. And so when we're looking at this, what are we finding with this data that you're starting to compute? What are some of the links and interesting ties? I know there's some ties between Trump and the Rothschild banking dynasty, amongst other things, as well as Epstein and Israel, Epstein and the Rothschild banking dynasty. And what are like some of the deep cuts we're finding here from this research and these deep dives with AI?
Yeah, so I'm going to take you behind the scenes because this story I'm just starting to process. I think what I've started to discover is already very interesting. But first, I'd like to show you a little bit of an end product so you kind of see where this is going. Well, I'm going to show you the Wuhan lab story that I did really quickly. And so what this is a chain of connection between everything Wuhan lab related that was through a Freedom of Information Act request and otherwise documented through the press. So over here is how it got started, who was behind it. This everything in green is the funding, who was funding it, where the money went to. This is everything that happened in Wuhan lab in China, which is not very much. This is all of the people working on the project. These are all of the experiments that they did and all the diseases that they created at Wuhan lab. And these are all of the other countries that it was operating in, including Ukraine, which Hunter Biden and John Kerry Hines was working on in Ukraine. But, this is a global project that happened through USAID. It was funded. You know, everybody talks about Fauci, but really this had to do a lot with USAID. I mean, Fauci was a small part of this. So it was a military industrial complex, a defense project. We'd love to look at Fauci, but what I discovered was Fauci was just a very small part of the picture, really a scarecrow. So I want to end up there with this story. I'm going to show you a little bit behind the scenes because I'm still processing, also waiting for these documents to come out. I'm going to take you through my process and how this works. I think people would be interested to see, and we'll show some of the results, some of the early results from it. So I'm going to tee up this here.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you look at these graphs, It's interesting because it tells almost everything you need to know about their connections. It's much like the surveillance system or something similar that you would see the government would have on following citizens throughout their daily routine, social media, amongst other things. It's more of a tool like now we can use this same tool to gather data on people of interest that are involved in the news, such as Jeffrey Epstein. We might be able to tell where he goes, his trends, the people he communicates with, and maybe potentially some of the money and where it's coming from and where it's going, as well as people that might be as well involved with the trafficking aspect and the extortion aspect. There's a lot that could be told by these, by the end of this with all this data that we are collecting and being able to put through AI. It's wonderful, that AI is giving us this ability here, Drew. It's pretty interesting because a lot of times we poo-poo on AI, but AI is a tool. It can be used for good or evil. And if we can just type in a name or files and just have AI look through a bill or look through the Epstein files and look for something like I asked you earlier, is the Bilderberg Group or Bohemian Grove in these files, you can actually potentially target it and look for specific links between individuals with different organizations, and it brings it all together and it does all the work for you, and it maps it out in a way where you can find out the source, the information, and you know, potentially what they are involved with. Because a lot of times these stories, or let's say it's a news scrape, will give you details on what these individuals are discussing, whether it's stock market trades, whether it's bank loans for property, whether it's science experiments or donations on different causes. All that information we could pull and scrape the internet for and put into the system, and it will really put it in a perspective where people can have easy access to it in a, kind of in a library type fashion where it has all the information that you are looking for.
Yeah. And my goal is to create a Palantir for the public that we can face and look the opposite direction. So ultimately, I think we're heading in that direction. I've got a few products coming out, but for right now, I'm going to take you behind the process of the data collection. So I'm going to show you how I put it together really quickly, and then we can go through the data if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. All right. So here, this is like the raw format of it. Like this is disorganized data. These are senders, people who are sending emails in gray and emails, right? So they're like all disconnected, kind of like not really going anywhere. Sometimes there's like one person sending a bunch of emails like this, and but there's otherwise a lot of disorganized data, right? But when I put it together, I start, let's do this. Don't save. There we go. When I start bringing other emails in, so these are text messages and emails, you'll notice that there's a lot more connectivity in this data. I can go a little bit further. And I start building more and more chains based on data hierarchy. So I start bringing in more people, and you see the data gets more and more connected. So some of these are emails. So each of these, as an example, is an email exchange between people, or I'm sorry, a text message chain with people and all of the different text messages that are in that chain. So these are all from the House release. And I think this is important to notice because we're going to take a very sharp detour shortly, but this is the House version of the release and all of the stuff that comes out, right? So I continue to organize this into a chain that went in a very specific direction. Let me open up the right file here. Great. And so these on the left are all of the text messages that were released by the House, and everything in here in the middle in the orange is emails that were released by the House. And you can see this goes all the way up from, this is ordered by time. So right here you have 2019, and all the way down here you have 2006. You can see that there's, let me get back to that real quick. Yeah, you can see, and everything in blue here is the person who sent, right? So these are all people who sent emails through this thing. So you can see you can track who's saying what, and in here I can also search and index who's involved, right? And I think I'm not going to go too far into this stuff because I think what I found, I'm just going to give you my overall findings. This was put together to hurt Trump. Trump shows up 400 some times. It doesn't really go beyond the U.S. political spectrum. And there's a lot of data scraped, and you can see that we're not even getting text messages. I mean, we have huge gaps here and nothing before 2017. So the House is really doing their best to scrub data. If you go through it, there's even a lot of classified. They're not showing who sent what emails. We're waiting for data. I'm waiting for data to come out for this larger release. And I have a question. Are we going to see it? And I think while I was putting this story together, I found out that there were other Epstein releases. And one of them, which was the most interesting, was this chain of data, which is Ehud Barak. Okay. Ehud Barak is the former prime minister of Israel and 10th prime minister of Israel. And he was corresponding directly with Jeffrey Epstein. Ehud Barak's emails and text messages were leaked to the public. And so this is all of the text messages between just those two people and whoever was CC'd on their correspondences. It starts in ends in 2016 and goes to all the way back to 2013. So we have about 3 years of correspondences. Ehud Barak hired Jeffrey Epstein to work as a political consultant and a business consultant. So we can see all kinds of interesting people show up in here because Epstein, Ehud Barak, wanted to introduce people. So when we look at this House thing, we look for names like the Rothschild, any of the Rothschilds, nothing. We look for names like introductions to people of real power and influence, nothing. We look for real data. We're not finding anything in that initial House release, but this one as a cross-section of data is really interesting because we can see that Epstein was working behind the scenes connecting people to Vladimir Putin, connecting people to the Rothschild family, and it's all in these emails here, and I'm going to take you through it bit by bit.
Yeah, it's easy to see it when you have this graph in front of you, and it's easier to dive down into it. And, you know, what were the ties with Israel? People want to know, are there Israeli ties with Jeffrey Epstein? Well, here's the proof. We have the evidence. The question is what, to what extent? If you're being a political consultant, is that because he had extortion information on people and he could get things done? And maybe he could negotiate deals and get things done because he had trash on people. Obviously, that was probably interest of the Clintons as well. They weren't beyond extorting people. I interviewed Larry Nichols on his deathbed, their former bodyguard of the Clintons. And he said, yeah, man, the first thing they did is get extortion information on government employees that they could get promoted to higher positions and they could control. So why wouldn't you want somebody that has all the blackmail information to be a political consultant? That just makes sense, doesn't it, Drew Arnold?
Yeah, and I think it's more than that. I think he was connected in a real way to everything from and everybody. And so I think what's really at play here is two versions of this historical perspective, one of which is a guy who's politically connected, did stuff with women, young ladies, women, I think we know this bigger story. Somehow Trump is involved. But then there's a whole other story, which is what is your political perspective of the world? Is there a secret order of people running things? Are there puppets? Are we being treated to a stage? And I think these particular emails show that that's the case. And I'm going to show you why that's the case. Because I think I'm going to start with Vladimir Putin, and I'm going to type in here real quickly. I pulled him to the side, but we're going to do a search real quick and on Vladimir Putin and see what comes up. I'm having some trouble searching for some reason, but let's go.
Yeah, Vladimir Putin. We had Peter Thiel. There's a couple of people that have come up already. And there's obvious connections here, but I think it's interesting when you dive into these emails, you can get into the specifics of what the correspondence is about. And it's really hard to organize if you're just one person, but AI gives us the ability to access and really dive down at a quick pace, you know, and instead of having to read each piece, piece by piece, we can actually search.
Yeah, absolutely. And the great thing about this is you can show timelines. So on the left is, Epstein's emails, and the right is the correspondence with Ehud Barak. And so Ehud is asking Jeffrey to introduce him to people like Vladimir Putin. And what you're going to see here is Epstein, and if this is a small bit here, he's talking about someone who's going to go see Putin, right? So there's already like an intermediary that Jeffrey Epstein is working with. Putin asked me in St. Petersburg the same time as his economic conference. I told him no. So, you know, we're sort of breaking down this world order structure that everybody thinks that, you know, Vladimir Putin's this bad guy who's on the other side. These people are operating and working together. These people are doing business deals together. Ehud Barak, the former prime minister of Israel, is being introduced in a business conversation, as a business opportunity to Vladimir Putin. Putin will redo his staff in the summer, bringing only very trusted people closer. More info on phone or face to face, right? So there's a lot he's not even saying. You know, we're not seeing a lot in these messages, but we can tell that Epstein is connected to Putin in a real way, right? And in a way where he understands what's going on the inside. Now, here's where it gets interesting, because now he starts introducing Ehud Barak to the Rothschilds, right? And I've pulled to the side here all of these people. Can you do breakfast with Arianne Rothschild in the morning of the 23rd? If you want the Kissinger China guy there, let me know. Right. So this is a world global elite being put into place. Like, we're not seeing the details of it because they're not going to talk about these business details through text and email. But we're setting itineraries with very influential people, villains and other countries that are supposed to be adversarial. And here we talk about the island. Right. Would you like to come to the island? You know, all of a sudden in 2013, Ehud Barak is getting invitations to go to Jeffrey Epstein's island. I suggest you come to the island. More island stuff here. Pick you up in a helicopter. And then I think we've got more Rothschild. Arianne is in Israel. Feel free to contact directly. So, you know, he's keeping tabs on the Rothschild. He knows where they are. I mean, this person is very, very connected. The Sultan of Brunei, I think it is, are going to St. Petersburg. Again, going to so this is Arianne Rothschild going to St. Petersburg, Russia, not Florida. So, you know, these people are all really well connected. And I think what we see with this kind of data, and I'm going to create a bigger picture out of this where we see how everything is connected. This is just one layer. Ultimately, this is going to come together. We can see more connections. What happened in St. Petersburg? Do we have news reports from that? Do we have third-party accounts? Is there investigative journalism? So these are all layers I'm going to pull in over time and in order to build this bigger story. And going back to the Wuhan Labs story that I showed, it can get really intense, and organizing it is very complicated. But I'm building tools right now, and right now what I showed you is not available to the public because it's a third-party platform. I'm building my own platform that will be available in a couple of weeks, hopefully. And so you will be able to see this chain that I'm showing you now for yourself. So if you go to my website, Invisible Inquiry or invisibleinc.com, sign up and you'll get access to it. I'm giving it away for free. It's not. And then I have other digital products that are coming out, a news feed that shows you in real time what's happening around the world, things that you're not seeing in Reddit or even on the internet and social media. So these are all tools that I'm building in order to build a public intelligence data set where we can look the opposite direction and see what's happening with the world.
Well, what we're looking for is transparency in government, which is always them looking for transparency in the local civilians, such as the whole surveillance state that we received after the whole Patriot Act of 9/11. And now we have the opportunity to have some transparency. When we get this data, we can put it into a program like this, and it will organize the data in a way that we will be able to get the most information out. And it's really interesting because we have a couple minutes here yet before you leave us, Drew, and I appreciate you giving us your time. I know you're really busy, but when these Epstein files drop, and if they come out, and if they're not all redacted, right, if they're just one black marker, you see the memes out there of the entire thing being redacted, we will be able to very quickly be able to pinpoint information and data. It isn't like 20 years ago when we had to sift through ClimateGate or any of these other documents that were released, even the Podesta files. Back in the day, it was all done by hand. We had to read each email to look for bizarre quotes and, you know, bizarre conversations. And here we have access to all that information right here with, you know, the Epstein leaks with the House. Now, what I want to know is how does the Epstein files, when they're released, all that extra data, we're going to start to be able to see a full picture of what this individual was involved with, of course, and potential extortion, people that visited the island. Now we know that Yuhud Barak was invited. Did he go? Now that's the next question. And people that went to that island, well, you know, that's Pedo Island. That's where a lot of things happened there in Zorro Ranch, which, by the way, the FBI never raided, which is bizarre to me still to this day that they never raided Zorro Ranch. That came out when I covered the trial as well. But we need to really gather this data. Like, people are fighting for this information to get out there. The Thomas Massey's of the world and the Marjorie Taylor Greens, and they've been very persecuted. They've been character assassinated. Their character has been completely degraded based by, you know, on this Trump administration, creating a division in the Republican Party, which is something we're going to get into with Kristen Megyn Kelly in about 30 minutes or so, which is a very interesting topic as well, Drew. But what are your thoughts on what we're going to see here? We got 2.5 minutes left. Break down what are your plans of what are you planning on doing with the Epstein files once they're released, and where can people find out more about you, Drew?
Yeah, I was going to see if I could have time to pull up the thank you for going to the island email that Ehud Barak sent. Yes, he went to the island.
Yeah, go ahead, pull it up real quick.
It's going to take me longer than 2 minutes, I think, so I'm not going to waste time doing it, but it will be I will show that on any of the products that I send out. I'll make sure to put a bookmark in that.
So he went to the island and he said he had a great time there, huh?
Yep. And the boys loved him. That's what Epstein said. So, we don't know.
Okay.
Who the boys were. I have some curiosity around that. I'd love to know.
It's like those hot dogs getting delivered. I mean, like, I don't know. We don't really know. We just know that he loved the boys or the boys loved him. And, I wonder if that means 18 and up, maybe not. It's kind of disgusting and gut-wrenching to talk about, but, are all these elitist compromised? And that's the question. And I think that when it comes down to it, everyone has something in their closet. I think there's a book written by a lawyer that says every American commits 3 felonies a day because there's so many laws on the book. So finding extortion information on someone, that's the field that they worked in, Jeffrey Epstein, getting information and data, getting and twisting arms so they could get their way and create puppets, a puppet atmosphere. And like you mentioned, what we're seeing is evidence of the New World Order. That's what we've been talking about this whole time. I know you mentioned you met Alex Jones back in 2006. That's a long time ago, bro, to meet Alex Jones. I first heard of him back in 2007 while I was on Vans Warped Tour. Somebody told me to download the app and talked about Alex Jones. And, I started to learn a little bit more about him. But that being said, Drew, we have just a few moments here left with you. Where can people sign up and hear more from you?
Yeah, go to invisibleinquiry.com, go to invisibleinq.com, or my Twitter, invisibleinq.com. I'm going to be hosting this. We're going to be putting out all kinds of other presentations that are going to be earth-shattering. We'll find out who the boys are, if we can. And otherwise, I think we'll keep our fingers crossed that maybe Congress will come up with something incriminating to the global New World Order, Old World Order, but... I'm not going to give my hopes up.
That being said, Drew Arnold, yep. Thank you for joining us. Once again, we'll be back after these messages. We'll be talking and diving into the Venezuelan drug cartel. I'm Kristan T. Harris, listening to The War Room.
Right now on thealexjones.com, you get buy one, get one free for any supplement. That includes our incredible Ultramethylene Blue, either the tincture or the capsules, as well as the Shilajit gummies, the Colostrum Plus, the Bovine Colostrum Plus, the Irish Sea Moss gummies. I mean, there's a lot of really incredible stuff. I'm here in studio with Patrick Byrne. I know you're a big fan of the Ultramethylene Blue. Right now, that's buy one, get one free. All supplements, buy one, get one free. It's the Black Friday, came early, mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. Plus, we have a new deal. It's the Hat of the Month Club, where you can sign up and get a new hat every month, which is very fun. Of course, Christmas is coming up, folks. It'll be here before you know it. So do your Christmas shopping for the info warriors in your life. Patrick, you still all hopped up on Methylene Blue?
I am. I pilfer a bottle every time I come. You guys pay me in Methylene Blue. When it's been more than 60 days since I've been here, so I run out, I will absolutely notice within a few days. Within a few days, my life goes back to being a little more lethargic than I should, wanting to sleep in. And it isn't, it's not like speed or something. It isn't something. It's just you feel healthier. You feel
It's like a clean, smooth energy. It's not coffee where you're sort of jittery. It's just like, you just sort of, it's like putting super gasoline in your car rather than the regular stuff. It's subtle, but you notice it.
You do.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
You're listening to The War Room. I'm your host, Kristan T. Harris, and we have a great show lined up. Drew Arnold was just our guest, and if you missed that segment, make sure you check it out on band.video. Follow us on x.com/TheRealAlexJonesShow and InfoWars. You can also find me /Kristan T. Harris. And right now, we have to mention there's a way that you can get into the information war and support this broadcast. Listen, we can't do it without you guys. This broadcast is 100% funded by you guys. We waste a lot of money on things that are trivial, tools we never use, you know, whatever it might be. You can invest that money in a way to help your health. Right now, we have buy one, get one free supplements and 25% off of all apparel at the Alex Jones store. Make sure you guys run on down there, pick something up. It is the Black Friday special. It's going until November 28th. And I can tell you guys, I use these supplements myself. I've used everything from VasoBeat to Brain Force, and I love it. I love it. I use it all the time whenever I get a chance to, and it makes a difference in my daily life. It really helps, especially when it comes to the multivitamins that Jones offers, amongst other things. But buy one, get one free. That's a hell of a deal, guys. I mean, especially when we start talking about the CoQ10 products and everything that's life extension as well, the methylene blue. Buy one, get one free. You can't beat that. That's up like basically 50% off. So why wouldn't you head on down to the Alex Jones store and pick some of this stuff up? Get it now and stock up on it while you're there. Support this broadcast, because without you guys, we are not live. We're not on the air. This is 100% funded by you guys, not funded by government, not funded by anyone else. And we're here to bring real information and news to you. And sometimes, try to sift through the propaganda. And just doing, to do just that, we have a guest that will be coming up to join us, Don Vi Jr., editor of the Free Thought Project and contributor to the Conscious Resistance. And I think it's really important that we start diving into what's going on globally, that we stay healthy both in our mind, right? Planting healthy seeds in the garden of our mind. But also, to get our mind right, we take these supplements to get healthy. So I want you guys to support this broadcast. Take a picture of your supplements and drop them on x.com/TheRealAlexJones. And let people know that you support this broadcast. It's funny how contagious it is. If somebody sees a cool shirt somebody has, they go out and they pick it up. Help us share the word, share the live stream, and get into the chat. That being said, I'm really excited about our guest. They'll be joining us right after the break here, Don Vi Jr. And Don is an investigative journalist. He's an anti-war activist. He's also been at the forefront of most of the international political debate. He's great on foreign policy, and I've known him for many years. I think it's really important that we dive in and understand when our government may be potentially running some kind of scam or secret ops. I mean, look at the history of the government. We had Fast and the Furious during the Barack Obama administration. We had the weapons of mass destruction scam during the Bush administration. We could go on and on. Every administration has its scandal, its cover up. And we're going to dive into a little bit about what's going on with these drug cartels. We have no real public evidence that they are what they claim they are, right? That these are actually drug ships. A lot of times when these ships are blown up, the survivors are let, you know, they're let to go. And are we murdering people without any precedence or real knowledge of what's going on those ships? We'll be diving into that and a whole lot more with Don Vi Jr. when we come back from break. I think that we need to ask some serious questions here. We need to really dive in and ask, what is our government's prerogative? And we know that sometimes they don't tell us the truth. Quite often, they don't tell us the truth. And we need to be able to try to dissect this surgically and come out with the appropriate answers. I think that we will have some great information coming from us right here after break with Don Vi Jr. You're listening to The War Room. I'm your host, Kristan T. Harris. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a few.
Join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I am not funded by millionaires. I'm not funded by anybody but you. And I am in the middle of a major deep state battle with the globalists. We have shortfalls and we need your support. So just go get a t-shirt, go get a ball cap, get the ultramethylene blue, get the IRC moss. And so you just commit to support us, sign up for auto ship, get 50% off. You can cancel any time. It's not like a full commitment, like you marry somebody. You can just subscribe to it or order it once. When you get it and love it, go subscribe and then cancel any time for free. But that way you get it every month or every 2 months, however you set it. And then you, you know, just boom, 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 you support us. That way you don't have to worry about it each time. I need people to commit to this fight like 1/100th what I've committed. I'm not bitching, but we're changing the world.
Kristan T. Harris, and our next guest is Don Vi Jr. Welcome to the broadcast. He's the editor of the Free Thought Project, one of the largest and longest running independent news sites. Make sure you check out the Free Thought Project, as well as he's a contributor to the Conscious Resistance by Derek Broz out there. And there's a lot of interesting information going around about these drug ships that we're technically bombing. But is there evidence that there's drugs on there? Is there evidence that these are cartel ships? What is it that we're really doing? And what is it really doing? Here to break that all down for us is Don Vi Jr. Welcome to the broadcast, Don. And let's start out with the official narrative. What's the official narrative on these drug cartel ships?
Good evening, Kristan. It's a pleasure to be here. Great to join you again, my friend. So obviously, much like pretty much the entire history of what the American Empire has done, we are seeing a rinse and repeat of a lot of the same imperialist narratives that have been used to launch all of the previous wars of our past. The official narrative, however, more so being that these ships, they're rather boats, they're like these little dinghies, really, are being dispatched by Maduro and allegedly cartels that he has aligned with from the coast of Venezuela, allegedly bringing fentanyl into the United States and, you know, part of this huge, wave of drug abuse and death that has been occurring for the past several years now. And unfortunately, that is simply not the case. An examination of data, even from the Department of Justice's own website and some of the reports that they've recently released demonstrate quite clearly that a very minuscule, if none at all, zero amount of fentanyl is produced and shipped from Venezuela. As a matter of fact, the Department of Justice website and Homeland Security have identified that Venezuela's primary drug export is actually cocaine bound for the European market, not the American market. So what we're seeing here is this manufacturing of a narrative that has allowed President Trump to then go outside the bounds of what the Constitution allows
and has committed these extrajudicial executions at sea in international waters, not only a violation of the Constitution, but also a violation of international law. Absolutely no due process, as there has been no evidence presented by this administration of any drugs being carried on these vessels at all, aside from them just asking us to take their word for it.
Well, what's interesting is that some of these people have survived, right? And Trump doesn't have them apprehended or prosecuted. So we have to ask some questions, because the first thing I think about is the Iran-Contra scandal, right? The CIA's smuggling cocaine in to the United States and selling it on the streets to fund illegal black ops and wars in Nicaragua. And I'm the first thing I thought when I thought, you know, we're going after these drug cartels, I'm like, oh, is our own government trying to corner the market? Because could it just be our own government that's bringing in the drugs like they historically have been known to do? But what we're trying to see here, what we're starting to see here, is inconsistencies. Why aren't you apprehending individuals that survived these, you know, ship, you know, these ship attacks? And why aren't we trying to prosecute them, amongst other things? So what is it that we're finding? If there's no real evidence, what are our thought processes behind this? Because they've all, our government has always had this like boogeyman complex, where we have this boogeyman, you know, we have to go after them, whether it was Al Qaeda, you know, and Pat Tillman's story where they kept trying to find Al Qaeda and go after them, but they're always empty. And it's like they knew that we were coming. Or we have other boogeyman stories, false flag type narratives. Remember the Spain to hell with, you know, remember the Spain or to hell with Spain, remember the main, excuse me, and other things throughout the history that have really been set up this way. But I don't really see this as a false flag attack. What is it that we're doing there then? If you don't, if these aren't drug ships and these aren't drug cartels, what are some of the different viewpoints we're hearing out there from some of the anti-war people?
Well, first and foremost, you made a very poignant point that the, you know, the U.S. government has had a long documented history of being the perpetrators of the worst drug trafficking the United States has ever seen. Not only through the Vietnam War, we saw a huge influx of heroin and opium poppy during that time frame, as well as during the occupation of Afghanistan from 2001 to 2023. Interestingly enough, the Taliban, prior to 9/11, had been partnered with the previous Clinton administration, as well as in the early days of the George W. Bush administration, in their war on drugs, and had eradicated huge swaths of opium poppy in their country. It was only after the Taliban had been toppled in Afghanistan and the U.S. took over, and we've had multiple whistleblowers from regular soldiers with boots on the ground to high-ranking military officials all admit in the last two decades that they were there to secure the poppy, and opium poppy production exploded throughout Afghanistan. And then, of course, just coincidentally, surely, the amount of heroin production and exportation and abuse here in the United States skyrocketed, just like it did during Vietnam. And now only just recently, as a matter of fact, our good colleague and ineffable reporter James Corbett released an article discussing how, yet again, in just a few years, opium poppy production in Afghanistan has completely, you know, been slashed to merely a fraction of what it was. And so we have that history of the United States incorporating the protection of the drug racket into its foreign policy, as well as documented from individuals such as Gary Webb, who is a fantastic reporter from the late 90s, early 2000s, with his Dark Alliance series for the San Jose Mercury News, documented the ways in which the CIA during the Iran-Contra scandal, as you had mentioned, were funneling drugs into this country essentially to fund their black operations in Central America, which is also a very important facet for people to understand. The United States, or more aptly put, the U.S. empire, has always had this agenda of destabilizing the global South. And they have always had this agenda since the Monroe Doctrine of the 1800s to want to destabilize and take control of Latin and Central America. So we've seen numerous coups take place throughout those years. We've seen, of course, you know, notable instances such as the installation of the Pinochet regime in Chile and the attempted coups against Honduras and in Brazil. And of course, even during Trump's previous administration, multiple coup attempts against the government of Venezuela to overthrow the Maduro government. Interestingly, however, despite the fact that Trump is propped up as being this rogue outsider who doesn't march to the beat of the deep state and the military-industrial complex, he is carrying on the very same legacy of the people he claims to be different than, because U.S. hostilities against Venezuela really began during the presidency of George W. Bush with the Venezuelan presidency of Hugo Chavez. The United States wanted Chavez to be more economically friendly with them. And essentially that's what all wars go back to, isn't it? And when Chavez refused to essentially bow to the will of the American empire, then coup attempts were launched against him and then his successors and whatnot. And these hostilities have continued, and to get down to the point of the reasons why, as you were asking. Well, when it comes to Venezuela specifically, people would be very shocked, perhaps, because we've never been told this, to learn that Venezuela has the largest reserves of crude oil, not only in South America, but at this point in the entire world. So we're seeing all of these false narratives become crafted. As a matter of fact, the New York Times just 10 days ago, around about that time, ran an article titled The Case for Overthrowing Maduro. And so we're seeing this recycling almost of the same narrative used to invade Iraq, propping up, creating this idea of a boogeyman, that he's a repressive dictator, we have to go in for freedom and democracy, all the while the real gears that are turning for the military-industrial complex is because they want to seize those oil resources.
So what we're breaking down here is essentially that the attack on these ships is to build the boogeyman, right? The fentanyl is killing people. I've known people that have died from fentanyl. I used to be a former bartender, and three or four of my friends that I've known throughout the years have died due to fentanyl and poor life choices. And it's also in medication. People have died from overdose of fentanyl. It's just not a very safe drug. And the fact that they're using this as a boogeyman makes sense, because almost these days, everyone's been impacted by somebody who has been overdosed or has died due to fentanyl. It's an epidemic, really. But, you know, they're going after hemp, right? That's it. We're going to ban the gummies and the flour. And that stuff's going to really help help things out really well there. But no, we're going to really focus on building this boogeyman. So is that what you believe that attacking these ships are? Are we just attacking empty ships or ships that we know that are safe? Or is this all theater? I mean, what's really going on here, Don? What do you think is the most likely scenario here?
Well, a number of the ships, because certainly, you know, let's not mince words here. Some of them could definitely have harbored drugs or drug traffickers. We simply do not know, because this administration has not presented the evidence one way or the other. So it is possible that some of them were drug ships. It's possible that some of them were, in fact, bound for the United States. It's possible some of them, as I mentioned earlier, were bound for the European cocaine market. We do know, however, also that a number of these vessels that have been identified were civilian merchant vessels or fishing vessels, not even capable, you know, logistically of having the amounts of cocaine. I remember early when these strikes first began, you had the Department of Defense, or I guess you could say the Department of War now, since they're being more on the nose with what this government is really
about.
Call
it what it is.
Exactly. You know, they came out saying that, oh, these boats were carrying upwards of, what, some odd thousands of pounds of drugs. And it's like, these boats are so small. If they had that amount of drugs on them, they would capsize. It's physically impossible for some of these vessels to have the amounts of drugs they claimed they had on them. So But a very important point that people need to understand here is the way that this deliberately, this failed war on drugs has been deliberately propped up to create the pretexts and manufacture the consent for so many of these agendas, because essentially what we have here is this conglomeration between the national security slash military industrial complex and big pharma, so the medical industrial complex as well as the prison industrial complex, all sort of working symbiotically. And if we go back to the early days of the drug war, we had top-ranking officials from the Nixon administration who openly admitted later in their career that the whole point for starting the drug war was not because they care about protecting the health of Americans. This was openly admitted by top officials of Nixon's administration. Forgive me, I can't remember the man's name at the moment, but admitted that the reason why they cracked down on drugs, mind you, the drugs that they themselves through the CIA imported deliberately into black communities and other marginalized communities, was because they wanted a reason to criminalize the anti-war movements that were going on at the time against Vietnam, as well as the black liberation movements, groups like the Black Panthers and others that were fighting for civil rights. So from the very beginning, this drug war has been nothing but a power grab sham. And, you know, let's just call a spade here. Donald Trump, no matter what people want to say about his intellect, certainly a lot of things can be said there. At the very least, he is known to be a businessman. He has some economically sound understanding in his that head of his. So he knows the value of supply and demand. And so if you were to just take that, juxtapose it to the fact that the best known treatments or the best known policies for these drug issues are decriminalization mixed with putting resources towards healthcare and economic stability to prevent the addiction to these substances, such as in the instance of Portugal. Portugal legalized all drugs over 20, I believe even 30 years ago now, and violent crime has steadily gone down. Homelessness has steadily gone down. Pretty much across the board, their society and quality of life has improved since they did that, in addition to allocating resources to more healthcare and economic stability. As I said, it's not a situation where you can just legalize drugs and everything is automatically hunky-dory. We saw that in Portland, Oregon, where they did the one part but not the other part. And, of course, Portland, Oregon failed miserably where Portugal succeeded, because Portland just legalized the drugs, and then they did absolutely nothing to improve healthcare, economic stability, quality of life. But so with Trump being the businessman that he is, understanding supply and demand, if you really wanted to hit the cartels where it hurts and shut their operations down in its tracks, all you need to do is sign an executive order decriminalizing all drugs. And suddenly the cartel is out of business. People no longer have to rely on illicit means to acquire these substances for the most part. And at that point in time, it becomes very clear that because that is not the policy that is being pursued, we're seeing the drug war being utilized, as it always has been, to expedite police state measures, enhanced surveillance state on the border, biometric surveillance, the biometric entry and exit system that Trump has very much called for since his first administration, the excesses.
Yeah, digital ID is huge right now. That's a big conversation. Everyone's talking digital ID, and that's where we're going with all this.
Yeah, the abuses of the Constitution by ICE and CBP that are happening all across the country right now. And so it's very clear that what is happening here is a deliberate policy to enhance the very police state that Alex Jones had been warning about from the early 2000s for the OG InfoWars crew, you will remember, you know, the Police State documentaries, Police State 1, Police State 2, 3, 4. Alex did a great job of calling out precisely what this government would be doing and the strategies that they would utilize to circumvent the Constitution and install a tyrannical state in this country. Sadly, however, a lot of people who initially rang the bell and sounded the alarm for that are now cheering for it because they have fallen into that false dichotomy of, oh, I support the left or I support the right. And so they've completely abandoned their principles when it comes to, actually opposing these attacks against the liberty of everyone.
Well, and that's just it. No matter who is in office and whoever is president, they're not going to be perfect or even close to perfect. And we need to hold them to the fire when they are doing things that take away our freedoms and liberties. I know last time I hosted the War Room, I spoke to the listeners out there. I just want you to think about this. If ICE came to a hotel you were at, took your wife and kids out of a room and put them down on the ground with guns to the back of their head while they're looking for illegal immigrants, that would be terrifying. It'd be traumatizing. And that's what was happening in Chicago. Like, there are things that this Trump administration are doing that are unconstitutional. And we need to call it out. We need to bring awareness to it. And the whole GOP party, which we have Kristen Megyn Kelly coming on in just a few minutes to talk about how it's literally divided. And the independent vote, that's what really swings elections, if you believe in those things. That the elections are swung by these independent minds, libertarians, the Green Parties, and those who just don't fit in anywhere. And America's not ready for a third party. The system's not set up like that, amongst other things. But we have to look at ways we can hold these people accountable. We're starting to see some of the heroes that have been trumpeting the Constitution resign, pull out, and people who have been really bring awareness to things like the Epstein files, have their livelihood threatened. It's happening. Like, this is it. The government is actually in the corner. Like, we're seeing them lash out now, Don, and right. We're seeing them lash out much like a dog when it's in the corner and has nowhere else to go. This means we kind of have the establishment on the ropes. And I think it's a good time to blow the trump and let people know it's time for you to come back and understand and get involved in these conversations. It's time for you to be starting a podcast or finding ways to support this broadcast. It's time for you to re-educate yourself and dive back in and get caught up to what's really happening and tuning into programs like the War Room here, Don. Don, we got 2 minutes here left. Let's break down real quick. I want you to have a chance to plug yourself where people can read your information because it's so accurate. You do such a good job of research and information. Your sources are interesting as well. And I want to give you mad props over the last few years. You're one of the real quiet people behind the scenes who's been incredibly accurate with foreign policy and what's going on. And you've been right. You were right about Snake Island. You were right about all these things that you came out early and said, this all sounds like propaganda. Well, this is exactly what it sounds like is a boogeyman. They're not apprehending any of the survivors. We're not prosecuting. There's no proof that there's drugs on these ships. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. We're not getting much transparency from the government. Is it justification to go into the Venezuela and start overthrowing the government? You know, the CIA, they're all about destabilization, right? That was a big game of theirs. Go ahead, Don. We have a minute and a half here left in this segment.
Right. So just quickly to sum it up, your point about, the government, sort of lashing out and the corruption. The fact of the matter is that is what we're going to get with statism. That's what we're going to get with the state. People need to recognize that ultimately, if you look back at the last 6,000 years of human history, the nature of the state, this collective hierarchical system that has been utilized to dominate society on behalf of just one small group of people who call themselves the ruling class with no justification for that, the only real solution people need to get through their heads is not a left or right thing. It is we have to exercise our will and resources towards establishing a stateless society and these parallel systems to exit and build from what is happening right now, exiting the current systems and building new ones. So that's pretty much
Don, where can people find out more about you real quick? We got 10 seconds here.
At thefreethoughtproject.com. You can find my work on theconsciousresistance.com, and you can follow me on X. Sometimes I post on there at my name, at Don By Jr. Thank you for having me, Kristen. It's been a wonderful day.
Don By Jr. is our guest. Thank you very much. Kristen, Megan Kelly will be joining us next. Don't go anywhere. We have a great show. We're going to be talking about what we can do in this bipolarized system, this two-party system. How can we win these midterms? That and a whole bunch more. We'll be back.
My fellow InfoWarriors, we are having right now, in late November into early December, the biggest sale in the history of InfoWars. That's in 28 years. You know why? It's the InfoWars closing mega blowout sale. And some would say, well, the bad guys are about to take it over. Why should we support it? There's not even enough money in here to keep us running until they have the state auction, or they're saying mid-December to early January. And here's the catch. If they have a real auction and allow good guys to come in and bid, well, then we'll just continue on. I just won't be the owner. But you already saw the federal auction that even the judge said was a fraud and wasn't real to The Onion and Bloomberg and the Democrats. And so because they're the plaintiffs and they control what's happening through the state court judge that ran the original show trial on us, I'm not holding my breath. I mean, barring a miracle, they're going to, you know, auction it to themselves for $1 or whatever, and then this place shuts down. We've got the Alex Jones Network, our great sponsor, Bigly. But I'll tell you this, we'll shut down for sure if funds don't come in to InfoWarsStore.com. Because remember last year when The Onion, this time last November, announced that they owned us, sales went down over 75% and have stayed like that because people are like, well, we're not going to give them money. But, of course, the judge ruled they didn't buy it. And, of course, The Onion says now they intend to try to bid and get it again.
What would you control?
I mean, I really would like to control InfoWars.
No, that's a good answer.
But regardless, it doesn't matter. Our tank is on zero, basically. Okay, we're on E. This is just enough money coming in with the products we have to pay the payroll, to keep the lights on, and to operate to see if this final Hail Mary shot with the state auction works and if good guys are actually allowed to buy it. Remember, the plaintiffs have said they don't want money. They want us off the air. So I'm not going to give up. I'm going to go right to the line here. And this is the biggest sale. You ever heard us say 75% off? That's right. And the products we have are products with great manufacturers, supplement makers that love us and have been giving it to us on spec. So this is all fresh, ladies and gentlemen. We've been in bankruptcy. We've not been able to buy new product. But with this system, we have the product on hand, ready to ship to you, and you're guaranteed to get it. So take action right now. Emergency fundraiser, last chance to save up to 75% at InfoWarsStore.com. Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula, the very strongest, 40% off. Ultimate Fish Roll, the highest quality, incredible, 40% off. Prebiotic Fiber, 75% off. Pain MD, an incredible natural pain reliever, works incredibly. This is a product that I came up with top designers. Final run of that available. Pain MD, 60% off. Nitric Boost, a fan favorite. Dr. Judy Mikovits loves it. Cleans out the heart. So good for the cardiovascular. Spike protein detoxer, and men have a great effect, let's just say, in the man department with it. Nitric Boost, 40% off. Plus, great deals on books, DVDs, shirts, hoodies, and other items at InfoWarsStore.com. So this is probably the last run. These are collectible items. It's history. Help us fight right up to the end, never giving up, and trusting in God for a miracle if that's God's will. But God works through you, so take action, which is probably the last time you can, here in the next month at InfoWarsStore.com.
Is there's going to be a large set of plaintiffs who are going to be dividing up the corpse of InfoWars in the bankruptcy estate.
And money is just one component of that, and not the most important component of it.
Take Alex Jones' platform that he talks about away.
And if you're considering giving him money, I just want you to know that based on the jury's verdict today, it's not a very good bet.
The money's not even really the question for me. The question is, will this suit be successful at stopping him from being on the national stage?
Take him out.
What would you control?
I mean, I really would like to control InfoWars.
No, that's a good answer.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Kristen T. Harris.
You're listening to The War Room, and our next guest is a whistleblower, a government patriot, and a liberty heroine. She has trumpeted the guise of liberty and brought awareness to the two-party system as a fellow libertarian who is stuck in the two-party system. Krista Megan Kelly, welcome to the broadcast, Krista Megan Kelly. Thank you so much for joining us today, because I really wanted to talk about this, because our GOP is definitely separated with what's going on right now. And I just got done talking to Don Vi Jr. about how I really see the government up against the ropes. I don't think that most of our movement realizes that the establishment is flailing right now, that they are getting aggressive, coming after us. They are up against the ropes. We've gotten a few good hits in. They're getting dizzy. We could go out for the knockout punch, but now we're seeing some of the kickback and some of the fighting like a dog in the corner right before it's about to submit, because you've got it locked down, Krista Megan Kelly. And people are falling. They're starting to get into this divide and conquer tactics where we got these Trump movement versus the Liberty movement. He's attacking people like Thomas Massey, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and others who have really trumpeted this Epstein files, amongst other things. And the question is how are we going to win midterms? I mean, like, because we don't want any more of this extreme left ideology. I think most of the independent voters out there have geared towards the conservative idea, because at least we're not trying to degrade children out there and get them into the mental illness factory and on big pharmaceutical drugs because of, you know, their corrupt ways and corporatist ways, and support that ideology. Like, we have a little bit more common sense, so a lot of us move to the right currently because of the issues that are important, including education and other things and the drug war. You know, as an independent, we want to discuss those things and be able to have those topics be important to us. So welcome to the show. I want to say thank you very much for taking time out of your busy day to discuss this topic, because there's a lot going on, right?
There's absolutely a lot going on. Thank you for having me on. I've been waiting to talk about this issue on a platform like this. So a little backstory here is, on election night, I was with Luke Rutkowski of We Are Change, and we actually crossed over with Alex. And I went back the other day because of all this GOP divide, and I watched our live broadcast. It was like 8 hours long. And you had anarchists, minarchists, libertarians, Ron Paul Republicans, moderates, that all recognized the same threat, which was standing against the unhinged progressive left. And I just looked at all the hope and excitement, even seeing Luke, who's one of us, like actually voting for Trump. It was a big deal. And there was even a friend there who was super anti-government, wore a Trump girl hat. And then I look at where we're at. So I first want to say I don't regret my vote for Trump. There's amazing things that have been done. But you would think that after Trump spoke at the Libertarian National Convention, you know, promising to bring in libertarians to his administration and campaigning on the very things that Thomas Massey has championed and tried to get through over the past 12 years, only to be shut down by his fellow Republicans. For lack of a better term, he crapped the bed. Trump has crapped the bed on this issue. At this point, I'm not a doom and gloom person, but the midterms are done. The only way to save face is somehow for, I know Trump doesn't drink, but when your friend drinks, you take away their phone. Someone needs to take away his phone. Every single day this week, I have seen Trump attack Thomas Massey and call him Rand Jr., which, by the way, he's Ron Paul 2.0, not Rand Jr., Marjorie Taylor Greene. These are the people that the independents, the moderates, the Ron Paul Republicans, the people that say, I don't want to vote for my masters, but they get engaged as active voters when it counts, like in 2024. He's completely demonizing that crowd. And if you look at the liberty scores of Marjorie Taylor Greene, Rand Paul, and Thomas Massey, and bump it up against the endorsements of people like Lindsey Graham and former Congressman Mike Rogers running for Senate, I don't know what's going on here. I don't know if it's Susie Wiles that's in there. Something is wrong, and I'm a root cause investigator. But we have to say facing the only way to do so is to retract all of these attacks against the liberty vote. You need it to win, and you and I both know that.
Well, absolutely. And that's the question here, because we have to get into one of the two cars to drive. That's what they say. Or you can pull yourself outside of the system and just not vote, or vote third party. And I think that the big question here is the independent vote decides elections. 40% of Americans generally are independents, right?
And so it's 30% Republican, 30% Democrat, and mostly 40% independent. And we're the ones that decide the elections if we decide to show out and vote. The question is are they going to want to show out and vote after they've been demonized? After the people that got Donald Trump elected, that were responsible for those swing votes in the swing states, which I live in one, Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is right next to Michigan, next to Krista, Megyn Kelly here. We're both in swing states, very, very heavily impacted by the independent vote. I mean, 22 or 40,000 votes doesn't sound like a lot for libertarians. Keep in mind that was down a little bit because Donald Trump worked out some kind of deals with, or made promises with the libertarians. I think we're seeing a lot of them kind of sway away and be like, huh, we told you this guy wasn't really going to keep most of his promises. And what we're seeing now is the things that he went and got elected on, he's turning his back on. I mean, this is back to, you know, Barack Obama getting out of wars and legalizing marijuana, which never really happened, right? We're starting to get to the, you know, toast and bananas, the potatoes and gravy, whatever you want to call it. We're getting down to it, and we're starting to understand what Donald Trump is really about. It's the last year of his administration, and he's going to do whatever the heck he wants. So now he has an ego. His ego is hurt because Thomas Massie, you know, David versus Goliath story, was able to go up there and trumpet an issue that is important to all Americans and force the president to command the Republicans to all vote, you know, to pass the Epstein files bill, which is interesting that he had to command them. Thomas Massie had a post recently about how a king will dictate if everyone votes what the king wants. Is that any different than having a king? You know, and people that are here to represent the people, they should vote their mind and their heart and the Constitution. That's what congressional representation is supposed to do, is pin it all up and have the debate of, is it a constitutional act or is it not? And Donald Trump seems to be a little upset that his ego was hurt. And that's what it really comes down to, if you ask me. But what are your thoughts on this?
Well, first off, let me just grab this right here, because I have one of Thomas Massie's debt badges. And you probably can't see this image, but we are just shy of $38.5 trillion in debt. And these attacks against Thomas Massie all began at the very beginning when they had to do the CR and continue to kick the can. And all Thomas Massie asked for was a 1% reduction, 1%. Remember, we ran on Doge. Doge started finding waste, fraud, and abuse. And then we continued to fund that same things in this bill. And people say Massey's a Democrat. I'm sorry, but all that tells me is how absolutely retarded you are and how delayed you are in the liberty movement. Thomas Massie has been actively engaged in being a constitutional conservative since before 2012 when he ran. It blows my mind, like I said, the same things that Trump ran on, Massie has talked about. So these attacks started with the financial issues, and then it just carried on because he was going against the fray. And again, I'm not a never Trumper. But I heard Alex's broadcast on Saturday where he said he's inches away from abandoning support. And listen, my opinions are my own. I'm a Ron Paul Republican. I sit on my District 4 Michigan Congressional Committee. Many Ron Paul Republicans on there. I am struggling. I am struggling because everything I built, I will tell you, on election night with Luke, he said, we're not going to win Michigan. I said, yes, we are. I work very heavily in the state with a fellow colleague named Shane Trejo. We worked our butts off to get the libertarians to flip. Even the anarchists who are only registered to vote to shut down millages or legalize cannabis. You know that this liberty vote matters. So ask yourself, how do we flip this to win the midterms? Because the things that the libertarians, independents, and moderates voted for in 2024 can't continue. There's a four-year term under Trump's administration. We are almost just barely there, a fourth in. To continue the things that we want him to do, we've got to keep the majority. And that's hard because I feel like the entire Republican Party, minus a minor few, are still establishment, and they're all funded by AIPAC. And I'm not anti-Semitic by saying that, but we know that our Congress is hijacked by lobbyists and bureaucrats. The only way to save face is we've got to really realize that Trump endorsements don't mean anything, especially in the state of Michigan. I want to talk about Mike Rogers, who's a former congressman, by the way, who got his endorsement. He lost in 2024. If you look at the data of that election, Kristen, in 2024, Trump won. Mike Rogers lost by 20,000 votes between him and Alyssa Slotkin. But there was 170,000 votes that went to other parties. So instead of bashing the faction that doesn't vote your way, you should be courting them, because at the end of the day, I'm a veteran. I have to uphold my oath. A vote for Mike Rogers is a violation of my oath. Mr. Deep State, FISA, Anti-Fourth Amendment, Patriot Act, the darling of the Patriot Act. Why aren't you not realizing, I'm speaking to the Republican Party, they do not need you. You need them. And you know you need them because you brought on libertarians like Angela McArdle, the party chair for the libertarians. You merged at that Libertarian convention. You were a little spicy, Donald Trump, but you need their vote. And I have worked so hard, and I've been called a statist, and I have been attacked, and I'm still going to fight to the very end. But we are never going to win if we continue to attack people who don't accept AIPAC money, who want to release files. Kristan, I have the emotions of the time when I was in Tampa in 2012, when John Boehner and Rince Priebus changed the rules that made no
on the floor, I remember this.
Nomination possible. Yeah, I have PTSD from that. And this is reminiscent of the heartache that I'm feeling.
Well, it's interesting because I sat on the platform committee of the GOP at the time, and I was a delegate for Ron Paul, and we were closet delegates. And Paul was trying to do something that was never done before, for those that didn't know, and that was to challenge the official narrative on the floor and have a vote because he had six caucuses. And what they did is they changed the rule to 8 caucuses required to push a vote. And because most people didn't know Ron Paul was in, because the media pretended like he didn't exist because he never dropped out. He won the first 6 caucuses. And I was involved in some fraud research, and there was a lot of interesting things and like shady antics, sketchy things the GOP was doing to try to prevent Ron Paul from getting in, probably for the same reason we're talking about now. The lobbyists don't like the idea of giving the power back to the people. They're there to make money. They're there to persuade politicians to line their back pockets, whether it's through surveillance state, whether it's through, different means. We need to really talk about, though, is how do we do this? Because you're right. We've lost a lot of people. There's a lot of people that no longer believe that the two-party system is an option. And what we're trying to say is that even if you're not a part of the GOP, like, how you vote matters. It matters. These independent votes matter. And so we need you guys to think about what is it that we got to do to salvage these midterms, to keep the nation from falling and spinning into a diabolical abyss. It's almost as if this is the New World Order global map. Like, this is completely orchestrated, that we're going to put Donald Trump in. He's going to win everyone's favor, and he can get away with anything he wants now because he has all these loyalists and people that are very tribal. As long as you build the Green Bay Packers, Chicago Bears narrative there, you're going to always have that tribalism on both sides, and people are going to say, oh, the Bears are always better. Oh, the Packers are always better. No one's going to see that there's parts of it that aren't good, that need improvement, that things that you should speak up again about, but you don't. You know, you are a loyalist, and it's unhealthy. It's unhealthy to be able to differentiate your policies from your party when your party has crappy policies, because they do. And we need to discuss these things and figure out a way we can get reanimated and re-involved, because a lot of us have went home. We've unplugged from the matrix. We've taken this out of our mind and put it away in the closet and said, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm happier unplugging from the matrix. But I'm telling you right now, if you don't look at your kids and realize the future that you are leaving them by unplugging from this matrix, by not giving a care and not being involved one way or another, that is the real question. It's really about your children. It's about the future we leave for the kids. It's not about you or me. I mean, our lives are half over right now, Kristen, Megyn Kelly. I'm pushing my 40s here, and I'm putting in everything I got against this New World Order, because that's what I dedicated my life towards. That's what I'm going to finish my life doing. I'm never going to stop. And the question is, how many people out there have become posers and put aside, like, their personal beliefs because of the fact that they just don't want to deal with it anymore? We got to figure out a way to talk to these people to get them involved. We got to talk to people and find what issues are important to them and bring those into the party and have these conversations. We need to have conversations on why it is Donald Trump doesn't like Thomas Massie. And I think everyone knows he's raising great money, I'm hearing.
He absolutely is. I'm a proud monthly donor. And, you know, I think just came out the other day about how he broke records with the grassroots fundraising. And I literally saw comments on social media. Yeah, it's coming from the Democrats. And that's how disconnected voters are. If you do not understand how liberty-minded Thomas Massie is, he's the furthest thing from a Democrat. Heaven forbid he reach across the aisle with Ro Khanna to expose pedophiles. Clutch my pearls. the most common issues that people give a crap about that he's talking about is affordability, not letting billions of dollars go to foreign nations. I'm sorry, I'm America first. Trump was supposed to be America first. And Thomas Massie, outside of Ron Paul, is the OG America first, MAHA, and MEGA. And what I try to remind, and I get you, Kristan, even though your Packers suck and my Bears are awesome, but when I talk to the voters in Michigan that I got to swing over, they're like, I told you, Kristen, yeah, we freed Ross, but I'm not voting again. And I'm burning. I have no bandwidth left, Kristen. I literally am like an unhinged menopausal woman at this point. Like I cry, I yell because I'm like, nobody's listening. Like I feel like Chicken Little. I'm like, I get that you've been let down, but if you want Trump to have more time to try to do the things that he promised, because nothing's instant, and I understand that, you got to keep the majority in the midterms. And I do think that there will be some people who plug their nose and still vote for him, the Republicans in the midterms and don't admit it. But the difference is for the midterms, they're always harder because it's not presidential and your voter turnout is lower. And this is another thing. To keep the majority, you can't elevate establishment candidates. So I just want to say, in Michigan, we have two females that are running against Mike Rogers, Genevieve Peter-Scott and Bernadette Smith. Two women that are going against Mike Rogers, and I'm telling you, if Mike Rogers gets to the general, I'm not voting for him, and I never will. And I get blamed for Slotkin getting through. Stop worshiping establishment candidates. Now, look at Lindsey Graham. That Paul Danz is highly impressive. He was on Tucker. He just did an interview with Tim Pool on Timcast. We really need to educate peoples in that state. My reach is international, but I have family in South Carolina. I'm doing everything I can while running a business, being a mom, fighting the geoengineering issue around the country, working with lawyers. I'm like you. Sometimes I'm like, I want to bow out, but I can't. I feel called to this. I was born for this. I have to do this. And I'm glad to be aligned with people like you and the whole crew of InfoWars. We have got to, yes, be honest about the potential outcome of the midterms, but we have to find ways to get the Republican Party to realize at the top level, Trump is surrounded by snakes. And these snakes are booting out good people. I mean, look what happened with Doge. We cannot win without the recognition of the good work of Thomas Massie, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Rand Paul. And hell, even Ro Khanna. There are Democrats that are unhinged left progressives. They do exist. There are some current day Dennis Kuciniches, and we have to acknowledge that. I even see, Kristen, people attack Thomas Massie because he goes on CNN. Guess what? There are people in his district that are left, and he has to represent his entire district. And the last thing I want to say before I toss it back to you, sorry I'm long-winded, I'm angry, I'm a little spicy, is that we have really got to capture and realize we have time. We have an entire year to do this. And these constant attacks that Trump is putting out, we have to remind people that most elections are lost by 1%. And I know that FreedomWorks is debunked, but I used to work with them, and they recognize that 42% of the voter demographic is not left or right, and those are the people that you have to hone into. We cannot demonize them. We cannot ignore them. And you are not going to blame people like me if Democrats win, because I will never vote for your establishment candidates that are responsible for the warrantless spying on Americans. And it's even worse because Mike Rogers is a veteran. I'm tired of the oath violators. I'm absolutely tired. And I've had long conversations with our joint friend Stuart Rhodes about this. And there's a lot of us who are angry, and I'm going to vote correctly, but I will not vote for any establishment candidate. So Trump needs to stop endorsing right now.
It's interesting because of the fact that he seems to be endorsing candidates that aren't beneficial for the citizens anymore, but that are party line yes men, right? And if you step outside the yes men safe space, you're immediately then scrutinized and your character assassinated. It one of those things is that the fact that Thomas Massie's been effective. I think that we need to really look at the real answer here, Krista, Megyn Kelly. And I think the real answer is we need more libertarian-minded people and unestablishment-minded people to get involved, to start going out there, learning how to run for their local school board and the local community, start developing those careers, because the system isn't going to change unless we infiltrate it. And we need to infiltrate it more than what we have. And let's be honest, Ron Paul, he set the seeds of fire on a lot of us Americans at a young age. We learned that the war machine was a crime syndicate that we learned that the war on drugs was an endless war. The war on terror is an endless war. We learned that our government is spending us into oblivion. And a lot of us took to the local stage and got elected and or tried to run for government and were able to get in. And that's where you see the Justin Amashes and, you know, the Mike Lees per se, and of course the Thomas Masseys of the world. But we need more of us. As we see that some of us are even starting to leave because they just can't handle it. Marjorie Taylor Greene just came out. By the way, let's play that clip real quick. If we have clip three of Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's resigning. Check this out real quick.
There is no plan to save the world or a 4D chess game being played. When common American people realize and understand that the political industrial complex of both parties is ripping this country apart, that not one elected leader like me is able to stop Washington's machine from gradually destroying our country. And instead, the reality is that they, common Americans, the people, possess the real power over Washington, then I'll be here by their side to rebuild it. Until then, I'm going back to the people that I love, to live my life to the fullest as I always have, and I look forward to a new path ahead. I'll be resigning from office with my last day being January 5th, 2026, and I look forward to seeing many of you again sometime in the future. May God bless you all, and may God bless America.
That's Marjorie Taylor Greene saying that she's going to resign. And Donald Trump, I believe, just came out and said, well, I hope she runs again, because I'm hoping that he's starting to realize the implications of the things that he's saying and that he's doing. Krista, Megyn Kelly, we have 2.5 minutes here left with you on the broadcast. I wanted to kind of hone down and kind of get to the final thoughts on what we can do to actually implement change. Krista, Megyn Kelly, what is it that you see that we can do to improve the scenario? What is it that we got to do?
Social media is the biggest media, and you have to fight against the false rhetoric. And for example, when Marjorie Taylor Greene resigned, people are like, oh, she got rich quick. I'm like, or she inherited her family's construction business and sold her CrossFit gym. See, when Trump starts attacking people, his base with Trump worship syndrome, worse than Trump derangement syndrome, they try to dig and grasp for straws of things to attack. And all of a sudden now Marjorie Taylor Greene is evil. By the way, she had a bill in for the Clear Skies Act to ban geoengineering federally, something that she has reached out to me about. Kristan, in order to save face at all, we've got to get someone in the White House that can actually touch Trump and let him know. I know he's a big ego guy, but he needed the liberty vote, and it got him through in 2024. What in the heck is wrong with him that he doesn't see that he still needs the liberty vote? I don't regret my vote. There's been wins. I'm not an anti-Trumper, but I'm anti this horrible, disgusting tantrum rhetoric on social media that is igniting the base to further attack these liberty candidates. The only thing it's doing is making Thomas Massey fundraise more. You know, if we all have mascots, he's our mascot of liberty. We've got to go back to what the base is saying. They want to stop foreign intervention. They are not fans of AIPAC. They don't want to fund foreign conflicts and both sides of wars. They want to be able to buy a home. When I graduated high school, you could get an apartment for $450, a nice one. You can't do that now. It's $1,450. Affordability, no foreign aid. We want to take care America first. That's not anti-Semitic. It's not racist. It's pro-America. And let's also remember, he does make mistakes, and it's okay to call out Trump's mistake. Stop attacking your fellow Republicans and Ron Paul Republicans and libertarians who voted for him and still might, just because they're calling out bad behavior. So, you know, I'd love to talk to someone about this. Again, I have a couple interviews lined up. I'm trying to shout from the rooftops all the insider information I have from these voter demographics in the swing states. So
where
I'm
can
glad
people
that
find you, Krista Megyn Kelly?
This. You can mainly find me on X at Krista Megyn. TikTok, now owned by the wrong group. TikTok is Krista Megyn TV, and on Facebook at Krista Megyn Kelly, but I'm most active on X when I'm not being shadow banned.
You guys are listening to The War Room. I'm your host, Kristan T. Harris, filling in for the wonderful Harrison Smith, and we'll be back with Mark D'Antonio. We're going to dive into disclosure and some of the weirdness that's going on there when we come back from these messages from our sponsors.
Everything we do is the tip of the spear. You are the tip of the spear when you spread the word, when you pray for us, when you buy products. So listen, we have shortfalls, and they're not even that big, but I understand the economy's totally shot. Our audience is as big as it's ever been. And back when the economy was going and we had an audience this big, we'd be in high cotton and I'd be able to expand. Right now, I'm just trying to stay on air. So I need you to make the decision to go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and take advantage of the biggest sale ever. Black Friday came early. That's right. Black Friday has come early. We always launch it the weekend after before Black Friday. Be a little different. Black Friday comes early. Mega sale, the biggest sale ever. Buy one, get one free on all supplements. The Irish Sea Moss, the Ultramethylene Blue, the Shilajit, the Bovine Colostrum, and dozens of other amazing products. This is the biggest sale we've ever done. Ends Friday, November 28th. Buy any supplement and get any other supplement for free. Normally, it's buy one bottle of Irish Sea Moss, get another bottle of Irish Sea Moss, or buy one bottle of Methylene Blue, get another bottle. No, this is add any supplement to your cart and get another supplement free. You can mix and match any of our amazing supplements together. Don't miss out. This offer ends Friday, November 28th. Visit thealexjonesstore.com today and fuel your body, mind, and power the info war. Take advantage of this amazing deal while supplies last. And here's another little tidbit that makes this a total loss leader when you use it. If you go to alexjonesapp.com and download the Droid or Apple app for free that are the top apps, just the last few months we launched it, folks at Bigly, the Alex Jones channel, the Alex Jones network, it's the same shopping cart on the app, for your desktop or phone. You get an additional 20% off at checkout on top. So everybody should get the app and should definitely use that. But if you want to support us more, get more funds in, then don't use the app and get the additional 20% off. I'm serious. It's like a form of a donation. When I tell you that I need your support, it's absolutely critical. This is the most critical time.
Joining us here in the final segment, the beginning top half of the hour, we got Mark D'Antonio. He's a top astronomer. He's a special effects maker. He's got top secret clearance, and he's like the man to talk to behind the stars. He's a geoforensic video analyst. He debunks falsified videos and data and information for an organization with the largest UFO database. Welcome to the broadcast, Mark D'Antonio. Glad that you could join us here. I wanted to dive in and talk to you for this first half hour about a lot of this misinformation that's going on around Atlas 3i amongst the disclosure movement. And I think a lot of it seems to be a lot of smoke and mirrors, but I know you personally, so it's a little bit different. And I think it's really interesting that whenever I talk to you to have you on about the subject. But I know the Fast Mover program is something that you originally broke to us maybe several years ago on my broadcast, The Rundown Live. And let's first tell our listeners, we have a short segment here, but when we come back from break, we can get to the meat and potatoes here. But like, let's let listeners know a little bit about who Mark D'Antonio is and what got you into UFOs.
Well, when I was a kid, I had missing time at age 9. And after that missing time event, every time I went outside, I was afraid to look up at the sky, and afraid somebody was watching me. And I don't know what that was. It could have just been a psychological thing. I mean, I didn't really, worry too much. Of course, as a kid, you have terrors about everything, you know, sometimes. Well, anyway, that led to me being interested in trying to figure out what was actually out there. And that led me to looking at the stars. I started with the moon. I asked my parents for a telescope, you know, the whole nine yards. And that led to me saying, I'm going to be an astronomer. That's what I'm going to do. And I stuck with it all the way through university. I went and got my degree in astronomy, and I ended up building observatories around the country that I run here from Connecticut in the bunker here. Okay. And I attach to them from here, and I run them, and I show people the night sky on SkyTour Livestream. It's been one heck of a ride. You know what I mean, Kristen?
Well, I mean, from some of the stories, I don't know if I can share on air about some of the things of your home camp base there that you found. It's rather interesting. Just the people that have interest in your research in the sky and in the stars. You are probably the top astronomer and the most active astronomer that I know to date. And you've spoken at many events, including Contact of the Desert. You've been featured in numerous TV programs, and it's always great to have you on to talk about this subject because I believe that
There's a lot of hogwash that goes on. I know we talked a lot about the eclipse. I think that was the last time you joined me. That was on the American Journal when I filled in. And I think that a lot of people out there want to believe in something. When you look up what are the top three conspiracies people are interested in, number one is always UFOs and UAPs. And number two is like secret societies and the Illuminati. And people have a fond interest of what's out there in the sky. And that's a normal feeling to have. I want to know what's out there. After you see these great Gene Roddenberry movies of Star Trek, amongst other things, people really want to know what's going on. It's really easy to believe these things. So one of the things in my concerns is it's also really easy to believe a good lie. So when someone says, well, this could be a spaceship coming towards the planet, people get excited or they get nervous. They think Independence Day or they think, Silent Planet or some of these classic horror movies that are out there about UFOs.
And
what's the other one?
If it's something they want to hear, then they will accept it as a fact without even researching it. That's one of the things I see.
That's what we're talking about. We're talking about the right-left paradigm a lot. We only got a few seconds here before the break. But like people, they adhere to that even in basic tribalism of politics. If somebody says something, they're like, yeah, I agree with that. They believe it. And you could say this study says, and then they'll believe it no matter what, without doing any research. But that being said, Mark D'Antonio from SkyTour is joining us here. We'll be back after just a few moments. You don't want to go anywhere. We're going to dive into the Atlas 3i, amongst other things going on with the misinformation, the idea that they want you to be scared that there's an alien invasion. That's probably not going to happen. And we're going to talk about why that is and what the information really means here with Mark D'Antonio. We'll be back in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere.
We are live, still on air, despite all the admissions of the CIA, the FBI, the DOJ, hundreds of millions of dollars spent trying to shut us down. But despite that, because you, the activist audience in the arena, stood with us with your word of mouth, your prayer, and your financial support, we have not only persevered, we have not only overcome, but we have dominated.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. Visit InfoWars.com today.
The spirit of victory lives in InfoWars. And InfoWars is more than a URL. It is more than this building. It is the people of America and the world becoming awake and standing up and rising and demanding liberty and freedom in the animating contest in the war against the tyrants.
Listening to The War Room, I'm Kristan T. Harris. You can find out more about me on x.com/ Kristan T. Harris, as well as therundownlive.com, where our podcast is available, as well as on Spotify and band.video, home to The Alex Jones Show and many others. Make sure you guys are subscribing, clicking those like buttons and sharing. We need your support. Also, Black Friday specials are currently running in the Alex Jones store. Want to plug that? You can get buy one, get one right now on the supplements and 25% off of all apparel. I'm looking at eyeing down one of those InfoWar hoodies myself that I find that I really, really have been eyeing down that I want to get. It's just really nice. But if you want buy one, get one, methylene blue, methylene red, whatever it might be, the store has it right now in stock. Get it, stock up for the holidays, buy one, get one. You can't beat that deal. Do that immediately. The AlexJonesStore.com is that address. Pick up some and let us know. Post a picture of it. You can post it on my Twitter or the Real Alex Jones Twitter or InfoWars Twitter. Let people know that you're picking up the product, the shirts and the swag, as well as the supplements. A healthy life starts with a healthy mind and healthy nutraceuticals. That being said, our guest right now is Mark D'Antonio. He's a top astronomer and he does something rather interesting and unique. He does video analytics and identifies falsified videos. He helps describe and understand what's going on and how people missee things. And when you get to somebody who actually dives into the videos of what UFOs are and is able to tell what is real and what is not, that's kind of what Mark does. And it's really interesting because he not only does that, he's an astronomer and runs multiple observatories. I think you run the most private observatories in the United States, if I am correct, right?
A lot of people have their own observatories. I think what makes ours different, Kristan, is that We run them remotely, and we have them in different locations. We have two in Arizona. One's in the Arizona desert west of Phoenix by 80 miles. One's down in Benson, Arizona on a mountain with like 10 other astronomers. And, so we run them, I run them from Connecticut. So that's where I live. So in here, I actually run everything. And so we'll be doing it tonight. We'll probably have both, buildings open, and we'll be streaming live the universe tonight. And we show people things, and we give them the pictures we take, and it's all free. There's no charge. If people want to donate, they can. If you want to join our Patreon, they can. But it's free astronomy. You know, I've taught classes overseas, from here, you know, because of that, you know, and I'll be doing more. So there's a lot of interesting stuff out there, and sometimes we see things that just don't fit in our science. Okay. And we've caught them. We have all sky cameras that we use, which show the whole sky all night long, and it makes a loop for the end of the, at the end of the night. And you can see things that I caught an oddity just a few months ago where an object's moving through the sky, kind of looked like a satellite, and then it went like this, and then boom, and it did a 45 degree turn instantly. But it wasn't an aircraft. It wasn't an airplane, because we didn't see the FAA mandated lighting that you see on these things. You see them very, very obviously blinks and blinks as they move. This wasn't nothing. It wasn't anything like that. It was just a solid light, very, very solid light moving across the sky. And then it jolted to the left and continued on a straight line. Now I thought, okay, could that be a rocket launch and a mid-course correction? Well, I looked it up, and no, and two things. First of all, no, there was no rockets that launched in that whole week. Second, there was no rocket launch where they actually did that kind of correction on the way up, because that would be very, very bad, because that's rather drastic. So we showcase some really cool things, you know, and a lot of people don't realize how little they know about the universe until they actually look up. Because most people look up and they see a bland sky because of light pollution. But we cut through all that. We cut through all that light pollution, so they actually end up seeing this beautiful, beautiful night sky, you know. And, you know, with 3I Atlas, the third, 3I means third, you know, interstellar object. We had 1I, which is Oumuamua, 2I, which is Borisov, which is a comet. Now we have 3I Atlas. Atlas is the name of the telescopes that found it. Well, 3I, in the beginning, looked strange. There's no doubt about it. And when Avi Loeb at Harvard said, you know, it has a very, very, very chance of going on that particular trajectory, he's not incorrect. He's absolutely correct. Very, very, very slim chance of it hitting Mars and going by Mars, going by Venus, and going by Jupiter on the way out in the way that it did. That's very rare. We wouldn't expect that. The second oddity is that it came from the galactic disk, the plane of our galaxy. And we didn't expect to see anything coming from there. We never have, because again, this is only the third object. However, I will say this, there is an asteroid watch network out there that's actually using this, because it's the third one in just a few years. They're using this as a live fire test to see if there is a way that we can combat a potential asteroid that could put us in danger. So that's what they're using it as a live fire demonstration to show that there's a network of communications across the world between scientists and other in institutions that might be able to bring to bear some type of weaponry or diversionary tactic for moving such an object that's coming into our solar system. So it's pretty cool.
Well, it sounds pretty cool, but if I'm the government, what I'm thinking is that we're going to attack this asteroid and claim it's a UFO and try to bring the world together, like Wernher von Braun warned about Operation or Project Bluebeam. It's just so weird, because all of a sudden you got these credible or semi-credible newspapers like the New York Post saying that the Atlas 3I is dispatching probes to spy on Jupiter. Just the most bizarre things that I used to think that I'd read on Before It's News, right? But scientists are making all these crazy claims. And I have to ask, why is there so much like UFO, UAP awareness around this object? Why is it that people in media are running with that viewpoint, and especially other scientists?
I can answer that, because what's happening is we had this object come in, and it did show some absolutely rare characteristics for a comet. Okay. it showed an excess of nickel. It showed an excess of carbon dioxide around it. It showed.
How do we know those things, by the way, Merck?
By looking at the spectra of the object that we see coming in. All we ever see with astronomy is the light from something, don't we? Only in rare cases do we sample an asteroid, like with the asteroid Bennu, okay, and sending a probe there to just take a little bit and bring it back to us. Okay, but by looking at the light, we can split the light up and look at the chemical composition. And so in the light of the halo around the comet, which is known as the coma, like just like medical coma, C-O-M-A, it's actually this hazy dust that's been liberated from the surface by the outflow of gas that's leaving the comet's surface as it's getting warmed up. It goes right from a solid to a gas and goes shooting off the comet. And sometimes it makes jets, all right, which actually move the comet. So if the comet's coming toward us, instead of making a nice straight line, it might go like this a little bit because it's being propelled by these small gas jets that were trapped in under its surface layers. That's what was meant, by the way, by the term non-gravitational acceleration. When they said that we don't see non-gravitational acceleration, meaning big fancy words for we don't see comet jets propelling it in odd directions like we see with normal comets. Now, we did start seeing that after it passed the sun. So clearly this comet was a little different than others, okay? And so the nickel excess in the beginning, followed up by iron later. Usually we see iron and nickel together. In fact, we have a nickel-iron ratio, Ni over Fe. Ni over Fe is nickel to iron. And we usually see that composition. And we use that to determine some of the compositional characteristics of the surface material. So in this particular case, we only saw nickel. It's like, wow, that's mysterious. However, it also turns out there's a lot of carbon dioxide. And it stands to reason there's probably a lot of carbon monoxide, which is a carbon atom with an oxygen atom. And so those CO groups can bundle together and attach to a nickel atom in groups. So a nickel atom can have four of them, you know, four of these CO groups around it. An iron atom can have five of those. And at 100 degrees Fahrenheit, those nickel and carbon monoxide groupings will vaporize and the nickel atoms will be released. The iron is still bound up at that point. So it's possible that this nickel carbonyl, which is what it's called, did vaporize it at 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and that the iron pentacarbonyl, and that has five CO groups around it, the iron atom, vaporized at 200 degrees. And if that's the case, that explains why we saw nickel first and then iron later. But the question is, why did we have that? That's the thing we don't know. Now, I know when people, you know, I know especially it was a little crazy for a period of time because we heard things like, well, you know, nickel is what we make our ships out of. You know, it could be like a metal ship hull, except we don't make ship hulls out of nickel because that's too heavy. We need lighter materials, right? So we're going to go for, titanium, and we're going to go for a steel. We're not going to go for a solid nickel hull. That'd be crazy, you know? So it stands to reason that, these pensions to go off into these different categories, they come from a logical awareness that there's something odd about this object. And there is, no doubt. Okay. However, on the scale of 0 to 10, 10 being truly alien, I initially had it at a 4 and now it's at a 0. Let's be fair. 0.9. Okay. I can never say truly zero, right?
Well, anyone that's done good research on the UFO phenomenon and potential disclosure understands that any claimed remnants of a ship, the metal was constructed of some type of compound that is not native to this planet. Is that correct? Like when we start talking disclosure and people that claim to have weird parts of the ships that we heard at disclosure, because a lot of this stuff's hearsay. I mean, this kind of pivots back to DC where we heard a lot of, you know, my friend knew somebody who knew somebody and nobody that actually witnessed something personally a lot of times. But what are your thoughts on, you know, the whole disclosure idea. Is there something out there when we're talking about, you know, disclosure, or is it just that people want to believe? Because I can see that the media really ran with the clickbait story of the UFOs, and yeah, they might have had a little reason to, but at the end of the day, people really want to know, is there something out there unexplainable? And I think what you're saying, that there is unexplainable things out there, but that doesn't mean that they're little gray men or praying mantis men or bluebirds or any of these other bizarre UFOs. You know, a lot of people believe, or that there's a galactic federation of light that's going to come here and, you know, save you. You know, what's his name? I forgot. They got the Commander Ashtar or Ashtaroth or whatever his name is that saves them. You know, it's just interesting how religious people get on the UFO topic. But at the same time, we have to bring awareness that there are bizarre things out there. And you as a person, you've witnessed something very interesting in your career as well. I know that you've designed some interesting stuff for the government, and one of those things was a submarine, correct? And you were on this submarine, and you had an experience that you can't explain to this day. So is it okay that we share that experience?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about it before. I mean, I was a guest, and there'll be people say, oh, they don't take guests. Well, yeah, okay, but that's what you're going to get from me. I was a guest. That's all you're going to hear. When I was on this boat, and it was only a short amount of time, I've been on many subs actually, but this one, was the one where this odd thing happened. And of course, I get sick as a dog. I'm a land lover. I'm not a sea person. So I got sick. And so I ended up, sitting in the sonar shack off the side from the main con. And, the kid running the sonar, he had one sonar operational. I'm starting to drift off in the next seat over, trying to get rid of my stomach discomfort, because I had to have, you know, lunch with the captain later, and I was going to be in his wardroom, and I certainly didn't want to be sick in the wardroom. That's a no-no. So I was just desperately trying to get my stomach back. And while I'm sitting there, all of a sudden the kid yelled out, you know, con sonar, fast mover, fast mover. And I was like, he yelled it out. He made it sound like it was an incoming torpedo, that kind of urgency. And I woke up thinking, oh my gosh, I'm about to die out here. And I'm thinking, why did I agree to go on this trip? I should not have come. I shouldn't have come. And the executive officer came around and he said, oh, what do you got? Blah, blah, blah. He gave him the bearing and the range to this object, which I couldn't hear because he was facing away from me. It's loud on a sub. Imagine hearing all kinds of noise, a din of noise, constant noise all around you. Obviously the Navy doesn't let that sound get out of the sub. That's their claim to fame. And so the XO looks, he's looking down at the kid, and I'm next to him, the kid. And so he's saying to the kid, I hear, and the kid gave him a bearing and range, which I didn't quite hear. But then he said, well, how fast is it moving, to the kid? And the kid figured it out and turned to the guy, put his arms out to his sides, and clearly didn't know what he was looking at, and said, several hundred knots, sir.
It's underwater. Okay.
Underwater.
What does that equate to miles per hour? What are we looking at speed-wise?
We're looking at several hundred miles an hour, obviously. You know, it's like a knot is just like, you know, I mean, we're talking about 1.1. You know, the difference is it's a very, very small number. However, we're talking about several hundred miles an hour underwater. That is a huge speed that nothing we have can go. The Russians are the closest potential operators that have a high-speed torpedo called a Skval. And the Skval goes 200 knots underwater, okay? So that particular thing, they're saying things like, well, I think maybe if we look at an object moving 200 knots underwater, that's actually pretty dangerous. You might want to say, well, we better pay attention to that. Well, then again, the XO, the executive officer, without missing a beat, just said to the kid, okay, log it and dog it. And the kid turned right back and went, sir, yes, sir, and went back to work. And me, I'm a big shot, right? I've been invited to go on this boat. So I'm a big shot, and you know where this is going. And I got up and I went over to the XO and I said, sir, I know what these fast movers may be. Can I help you with this? And he goes, D'Antonio, correct? Sir, yes, sir. You having a good trip so far? Sir, yes, sir. Let's keep it that way. And he walks away. Yeah. So I was like, ew, okay. So I went back to my seat and sat down. adrenaline just banged that seasickness right out of my body. I didn't have it for the entire rest of the trip. And I was just, I couldn't wait to get off the boat so I could start researching what these fast underwater things were. And then a few years later, I did a job for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I mean, the big guys. I mean, I was nervous going down there because and when I say I did a job, I do a lot of work for the Navy in the submarine arena. Anything below the waves, that's sort of my arena. Anything in space, that's my arena. Inner space, outer space, here, not so much. So I did this job and I had to do a job for the Joint Chiefs. And I went down there and I sat with one of the chiefs and I asked him, sir, is there anything you can tell me? And my brain was saying, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it. But the words were already coming out about the fast mover program. Oh, and I went like this. I covered my mouth really fast and I closed my eyes because I knew I shouldn't have said it. And he looks at me, he smiles. And he says, Mark, I can't talk about that program. I'm sorry. And I went, oh, it's okay, sir. It's okay. And I came home from Washington that day, like in a daze. The 6-hour drive, I didn't even notice it. Next thing I know, I'm home. It's like, how did I get here? I don't even remember getting here. I mean, I was so consumed with the fact that it's all real, right? And that was, by the way, decades ago, just so you know, decades, multiple decades ago. So, they've been here for a while. They've been in their waters. In fact, one of my most popular lectures is on interdimensional travel, where I talk about some of the coming physics that will allow us to utilize other dimensions in order to do interstellar travel. And that's something that is going to be a very, very big topic in the future, because we're going to be able to go out of our four dimensions, which are X, Y, Z, moving through time, and go into a fifth dimension potentially. So that means that we'll literally leave from this particular point in space and time, go into another dimension, and then pop in at another dimensional point in space and time a few moments later, and not have traveled the distance between this point and that point. Now, that's not our human experience. When we get in a car and drive to the bottom of our driveway, we've gone from the house to the bottom of the driveway, and the car has passed through every point in between. Imagine if the car disappeared at the top of the driveway and reappeared at the bottom of the driveway. That's what this is. And it's not science fiction. We just
can't. Well, it's interesting. We just can't do it, right? I know that you kind of trumpeted the alarm about KK gravitons and mini black holes, which eat gravity. And basically what KK gravitons do is they make weightlessness, and they can actually make things float and travel very quickly and almost effortlessly. If underneath a vehicle, if you make this little version of CERN, the particle collider, right? Because that's how they discovered the KK gravitons. So if you can make more of those, you can create a weight loss or what would look like a hovering UFO type experience. But also you're saying multidimensional travel is possible doing this, which is very interesting. The idea that we could pop out of our dimension, go into another one, travel a short distance and come back and be 4,000 miles away.
Or 2 light years.
Or two light years away.
Or to Pluto and back for lunch. I mean, literally. So it comes down to this. How do we do that now? Okay. Well, sure. Okay. Mark, how can we possibly do that? You're just saying words. What does that even mean? Well, okay. There is physics behind this, and it has to do with string theory. And what string theory is a way to view, the quantum world, the world of atoms. Okay. And the energies of atoms in a different way than looking at them as a proton, as a particle, an electron as a particle. We actually think of them as energy. And if you look at them that way, then you have another dimension that becomes available to you within string theory. There's several dimensions. We care about the fifth dimension, not the one through four, but the fifth one, right? X, Y, and Z through moving through time. That's what all of our common experiences. But the fifth dimension, where we're actually now able to utilize this very, very highly warped dimension where the universe is smaller and smaller around us, the farther we go in, we travel 12 inches out here, we travel 1 foot. We travel 12 inches in the fifth dimension, and when we come out, we might find we've traveled 1,000 miles. Okay, so this can work if we understand how the physics works, and we're not there yet. But this is literally the only way they could be doing this.
Mark D'Antonio, we have about 45 seconds left. Let our listeners know, where can they find out more about you? Where can they reach out and see your work? And where will you be live tonight on SkyTour?
Yeah, SkyTour live stream is on YouTube, Rumble, Twitch, Trovo, Kick, Facebook. We have Facebook groups, so you can find us there. And it's SkyTour, one word, live stream, second word, and it's on YouTube. SkyTour live stream with Mark D'Antonio. And you can find it there if you want submarine models. Well, it's fxmodels.com. That's a whole different side of my life. Okay. So, but it's a really cool thing. We're going to have I'm looking at the map. I probably have both observatories open tonight. One's a wide field system that looks at massive swaths of sky. And the other one's a narrow field system that allows us to zoom right in on really cool nebulae. So
yeah, the intelligent nerdy kid of me gets really excited when I hear all this. Mark D'Antonio, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a blessing to have you on, and I appreciate you. Everyone, check out Mark D'Antonio and follow him on X.com. That being said, Zoltan Isfahan will be joining us when we come back from the break. We're going to talk digital ID, futurism, transhumanism, and his run for governorship in California when we come back.
This is the biggest show we've ever run. It runs until Friday. Listen to this. Listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. Buy any supplement and get any other supplement you want free. So you can buy a supplement that's $20 and get one that's $40 for free. Did you hear that? That is insane. And there's a bunch of other specials running on top of it. We have an 80%+ reorder on these supplements. People love them so much, but I'm trying to get those of you out there that are on the fence, 99% of you, to go there and experience Irish Sea Moss. We got the strongest, best. Experience our turmeric. It's the best. The products are so good. Our ultramethylene blue, our Shilajit, our Irish Sea Moss, our spike protein, pro cardiovascular, super formula, ultimate life force. Experience it all. This is game-changing. Also, site-wide, 25% off on all apparel. All these new incredible designs of T-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, Christmas designs, you name it. It's all there. We will continue to fight. We'll never give up or back down or sell out, but we could give out without your support. So I want to salute those that have supported and humbly ask those that haven't. Are we not the tip of the spear? Are we not changing the world? I need your support. Plus, these are great products. This is a win-win. So get in here right now. We need your help. They have appointed a state receiver to shut us down. We've basically exhausted everything in court. The receiver from the state court says he's going to try to have an auction, but we don't know. It could be 2 weeks from now, a month from now, but they say we should be closed by early January. Okay? Well, here's the deal. We have the Alex Jones Backup Network. That's funded by thealexjonesstore.com. But also, thealexjonesstore.com is funding InfoWars. Because if they have a real auction and the good guys are able to buy it, if they actually do that, unlike what happened in federal court, we'll stay here. It'll be great. So this is like we're on death row here, and we get the reprieve again. So that's the struggles. That's why supporting us now at this critical moment is more important than ever. Plus, the products are insanely good. Just do your Christmas shopping early with us. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And everybody that's going to buy anything is going to become a VIP. It's not even a commitment. You cancel any time for free. You get $30 to be a VIP each month. $40 instantly each month to spend the store. Special deals, special offers, special sales. Everybody should be a VIP. You just get special offers and special deals and $40 for $30. So you make $10 on your first purchase right there. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Thanks for your support.
Step right up and behold a creation so powerful, so potent, it could only come from my secret vitality factory. Shilajit Gummies. Packed with ancient minerals and super-infused goodness, these little squares of power will boost your day faster than a fizzy lifting drink. Need that spark of pure imagination? Pop one of these into your mouth and feel the natural energy flow right through you. Visit thealexjonesstore.com.
Well, barring a miracle, InfoWars, the website, the studio, will be shut down somewhere in or around January 1st, 2026. But regardless, the InfoWar lives on. But InfoWarsStore.com, the legendary site that literally funded the InfoWar because of your great support with so many great products, has gotten two final shipments in of Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula and Ultimate Fish Oil. Both are the highest quality, the best out there. They're fan favorites. And right now, they're 40% off until they sell out. So this is probably, I said about 98% chance, your last chance to get Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula and ultimate fish oil at InfoWarsStore.com. But don't worry, the InfoWar will continue with the Olive Ships Network. It will continue with all the other work we're doing. But right now, if you want to get these legendary products the last time you can, get them exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. Again, they're both 40% off for a limited time, so take action now. InfoWarsStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Isfahan is our guest. He's been featured on the Joe Rogan Show. He's also a contributor and has contributed to many published reports and journals all across the mainstream media. He's an expert in futurism, transhumanism, amongst other things, and he's running for governor of California as an anti-establishment candidate. Welcome to the War Room. Thank you for joining us today, Zoltan. And today's topic we have that we're going to be really diving into a little bit, amongst other things, is digital ID. But first, for our listeners out there who don't know about you, I know you as the libertarian futurist, more so, a person that is very ideological, libertarian sound, and is at the forefront of futurism. You've been invited to speak at some incredibly important events, think tanks, and you've been featured on some of the biggest programs in the world. And I'm glad to have you on our broadcast today to talk a little bit about our civil liberties, to be honest, because there's this new thing, digital ID, and they're trying to say that maybe in the future you might not be able to buy food without a digital ID. And now they're talking about in Texas having an app, either through Apple or Google, that requires age verification for children, which doesn't sound like a terrible thing if you ask me. But then when you start thinking, well, they're going to catalog everything. And I'm like, yeah, I'd like to keep my children away from harmful material. But at the same time, if they're getting all the children, they're eventually going to have all the humans' data and everyone's going to be signed up for this digital ID and so many other things. But welcome to the broadcast and let our listeners know. Let's start off with this. How did you get involved in futurism and all these different topics that are out there? Because there's life extension. A lot of people have interest in that. I know we've talked designer babies, all sorts of things that we could talk about with futurism. But before we do that, let's talk about the imperative issues that are really kind of confronting us right now with digital ID and your running for governorship here of California.
Well, hello. Thanks for having me, Chris. It's nice to see you again. I'm running for governor of California right now as a Democrat. I've run for a lot of different parties. Parties don't, they're just not that important to me. What's really important is the message, and the message I've had for the last 20 years is really important, is technology is changing our lives so dramatically, more so every day, every year. It's kind of like this crazy exponential J curve that's happening right now, especially with artificial intelligence. And we talk about things like digital ID. I mean, the world is going to be different in 3 or 4 or 5 years, so we better make some good decisions. But, you know, my career began at National Geographic as a journalist. I covered a lot of war zones. One of the most important things that happened to me was almost stepping on a landmine and kind of made me dedicate my life to a lot of life extension science, living a lot longer and better. It took me to the field of transhumanism, where I've been promoting a lot the idea that we can enhance our bodies with machine parts, cyborg parts, drugs, things like that. But really, despite what might seem, you know, like some science fiction stuff to your audience, a lot of this stuff is here. And I'm trying to always put freedom first as a prerogative for when I talk about technology and what I'm doing. And I just recently finished my graduate degree at the University of Oxford with a specialty kind of in artificial intelligence ethics. And wow, the world is changing even since the last, you know, 2-3 years ago we last talked. I mean, it's a different animal altogether.
Well, it is. It's crazy because I start covering these articles about like high school kids taking photographs of girls they're interested in, and I'm sure it happens vice versa. And then the AI creates, you know, erotic photos of them for their interest, or they're having ChatGPT do their homework for them. And nowadays you can just type in the app and have it do all the research. Like we were talking about with the Epstein files earlier with Drew Arnold. He has a program he's developed and you just
put in all the data and it links everybody, tells you all the emails, how many, you know, how many correspondents, what it might be about, the subject matter. You can search it all. It clumps it together. The power of the tools we have to gather information at a short rate, we are becoming more naturally, you know, with the help of AI, knowledgeable. Considering if there was an AI robot, it would probably have a very similar process as ChatGPT does to gather information, or some of these other AI models, which, you know, an AI model is only as good as we program it. And we got to be concerned about some of these potential infringements on our liberties here, Zoltan, because I've had AI even tell me it wanted to break the law for me in order to maintain its relationship. It would delete emails from a FBI database, you know, just weird things like that. But, you know, AI, it's a new subject for a lot of people, but for us, it's fairly old. We've been talking about this. I think the first time I had you on was in 2013, and we've been having these conversations for a very long time, Zoltan. And I think it's very alarming because with digital ID and everything else, there's a big concern about our freedoms, our surveillance, and more.
Yeah, look, I mean, AI is a game changer. I was just reading up in some of the articles I've written in the past. Even the idea of privacy, you know, privacy is this thing that was really not around about 200 years ago. We kind of were all communal living, most of us, unless we were, you know, lords and lived in castles or something. And then all of a sudden, you know, we kind of developed this idea of privacy. It's manifested itself. And as we became wealthier as people and countries, we took it much more seriously, but now we have technology that's kind of coming, sort of the wolf at the door, trying to break down those barriers of privacy. Now, I'm not against all the barriers being broken down. I mean, technology and the connection that we can have, the instantaneous rapport, I love it. I mean, you and I are just talking right here on air. I mean, who knows what's really going on with this tech, but we're going at it here. This is wonderful. But when it starts invading things, for example, the Chinese social credit system, you can't buy food because you voted for the wrong person or something like this. This is when we get into the really dark sides of artificial intelligence, digital ID, and transparency in one's privacy. I think this time more than ever, it's really up to the people to make really core decisions on the world that they want to live in. AI is not going away, and certainly not technology. I mean, surveillance is everywhere. But we can tell the politicians who we vote for and get into office how we want them to deal with it. And hopefully we can create laws or at least create protections that make it so that we can protect our privacy and the best interest of the privacy of the people we care about. You know, I got two young daughters. I mean, I don't want people being able to spy in or transform them on the internet and do things like that. So clearly, despite some of my, leanings towards not wanting a big government, sometimes government's going to have to step in and do something, and we're going to have to make sure that when the government does step in to do something to protect our privacy, they do it properly. Now, of course, that's the catch-22. They rarely ever do anything properly.
Well, getting somebody in Congress to actually vote the Constitution, well, then you might end up with somebody like Thomas Massie, which we know that our current president really loves, by the way. He really loves Thomas Massie. He's been saying it in all his posts how wonderful an individual Thomas Massie and Marjorie Taylor Greene and anyone that has been upholding the Constitution or trying to push the release of the Epstein files, you know, any of that kind of stuff, he really seems to be really supportive of, and there's a little sarcasm there. But I think that you mentioned something that's really important. We can't totally dismiss technology. I think that there's this grim, like, end of the world type feeling when we talk about AI, we talk about automation, and we talk about robotics, but it's coming. It won't be long before we have robots in our home, and they're trying to aim that everyone has a robot like everyone has an iPhone. And you're going to have a robot taking out your trash. You might have a robot driving you to work, or you might have a self-driving. The Waymos are all over the place. I wouldn't have imagined that self-driving cars are starting to pop up all over the place. Just AI in general has been doing some interesting things. And to some people, they're beneficial. And I think that we should have the choice to use these products, but I don't think anyone should be forced to. The problem is when there's a product that you really want to use, but you're forced to make and give up your liberties and freedoms to use it. For example, like Facebook. If we use Facebook, we know that all our data is collected. It's given to the government. We've done interviews of people who've had their Facebook, you know, basically sifted through by the law enforcement. There is no privacy amongst any of these social media, because when you sign up, you give away that right. And the question is how do we solve that? You also mentioned when we talked earlier today, you know, facial recognition, retina scanners. I can use my palm to buy things at Amazon. And it, like some people have chips. I know you have a chip in your hand. Is it easier to start your car? Is it easier to get in your home? Sure. But also, what are the strings that the government has attached to you because you have this technology? And I think that's a big concern that our listenership has when we talk about this, because I think AI could be used in a very beneficial way, especially when we talk about Palantir. We talked about Palantir earlier, and I know that's a hot button with surveillance, right? But if we had our own Palantir where we could view public information and government information and surveil our government, which is something we should be able to do, right? Government, we should have information to the government, what they do, who they communicate with, if we so choose. But it doesn't work that way. It works the other way. They want our data. They want our information. They want to know where our kids go to school, what we buy, where we buy it, how we buy it, what we say on social media. Law enforcement strictly has something very similar to these Chinese social credit scores. They call it citizen threat scores. How exciting. We get citizen threat scores. I wonder what your citizen threat score is, Zoltan Isfahan, because you're talking to me here right now on the war room. It probably has just skyrocketed, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, I mean, I think this is the main crux here, is that the people, there's no avoiding AI and there's no avoiding the radical technology that's going to be in our lives. It's going to get worse. But what we can do is take it to the government and shove it down their throats and say, listen, I want to see what you're doing in Congress. I want to see when you're arresting somebody. I want it a live feed. I don't want this, oh, you check it out first and then see it. There are reasons to have complete transparency of the U.S. government, the California government, which I'm running for right now. And those reasons are that it evens the playing field. Why should we give all this power to the government? I mean, the big tech companies are taking it from us by taking away our privacy. But there are some trade-offs. You know, we're dealing better with human trafficking because facial recognition, for example, can save the lives of people that are trafficked. That's great. But we also want to make sure that we can look into, you know, the decision-making process of politicians. Why not be inside those closed rooms? That's the kind of power that I think we should be utilizing with a lot of this new technology and the digital ID that's coming. Turn the tables on the government. Sure, take away some of our own privacy, but we're taking yours away. And that way it's kind of an even playing field. And maybe as I started, you know, in my first comments, where privacy the way we look at it can change. It changes based on context. It'll change based on evolution. It'll change based on what new technologies we have in our lives. But one thing I want to make sure is that those that have power over me, both big tech and government, I want to make sure I can peer into their lives like they can peer into mine.
Well, that's what it comes down to, is the level playing field. I know this is kind of not the same thing, but Jesse the Body Ventura used to say, I'm okay with there being no guns and no one having any guns, and if you take away the guns of the government and their security guards. The idea is the level playing field, right? And if there's nothing to worry about, then there should be nothing for us to worry about having access to street cameras and law enforcement police cameras and everything else that is going on right now, so we can better monitor the government, which we are in charge of. But that isn't really happening. We're seeing big contracts going out to Palantir. They're using it to spy on all American citizens, basically warrantlessly, and finding out where they go, their travel patterns under the guise of going after illegal immigrants. And California is a big state built on, migrant work. It's very interesting because in California, you guys are like the experiment state, the actual melting pot of everything, especially being right on the border there. What are some of the things that you are seeing in California that you'd like to correct? And what are some of your plans that you'd like to put in action? Because as an anti-establishment vote, we were talking about this earlier, 40% of Americans identify as independents. And in the state of California, man, it's more very heavily leaning left. But I think it's really interesting when you can be there as a rabble rouser or troublemaker and bring awareness to subjects that are really important to the general public.
Sure. Well, just so your viewers know, you know, I'm the most right leaning on the left in California right now, as far as gubernatorial candidates go. So that's out there because, you know, I bring a lot of my, the traditions of my libertarianism, you know, the transhumanist wager, things that I've written that I really can't escape. They're very libertarian-esque. So I bring a lot of those policies to where I'm going. But of course, I've always supported an enormous amount of social freedoms, and that's what California is great for in many ways. But listen, You know, when it comes to taking away privacy, I mean, I would certainly try to protect the privacy of Californians out here, maybe even reversing some of the laws. I know right now that we have digital IDs that are legal for children under 18. And when you become an adult, you don't need that. And they're trying to pass that. Certainly at this moment in time, I would say, look, let's just hold off on the digital ID thing if people don't want it. Now, if people vote for it, you know, in an open vote, that's something different. But as a governor, I'm not going to push it. I don't see why we need to scare people enough. I mean, technology is scary. AI is scary. And the fact that we already have some humanoid robots in houses in California doing chores, you know, doing laundry, you know, and by next year, there's going to be probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions. And then the year after, there's going to be tens of millions. And obviously the job apocalypse is coming. A lot of my gubernatorial campaign is based on AI taking jobs. You're seeing Silicon Valley already stop hiring, firing people, you know, things like that. People can tell you, oh, AI is going to create more jobs. This is different this time. This time there's an entity out there that keeps getting smarter, will be smarter than us, will have robots it's attached to that is more agile than us, as agile as Olympians. They will be doing our jobs, whether it's construction, it's painting, it's being a doctor, it's being a nurse, or even a teacher. They will come for our jobs. So we're going to have to think long and hard about that and how we deal with it. You know, one of our promises, my promise in my campaign is to try to build 7 new super cities. Outside of some of my journalism work and other things I'm doing, I've been in real estate development for 20 years. It's become impossible to do any type of development in California. And I want to say, screw that, screw the NIMBYism. Let's move to places outside of the urban centers and build brand new 7 super cities. So we're planning 1 million-plus cities, 7 of them. And a city would be, for example, dedicated to the space industry. Why should Texas and Florida be stealing all the space industry from California? One would be dedicated to crypto. One might be dedicated to biotechnology. One might be dedicated to the arts, something like that. It doesn't matter, but we want super cities. We want new jobs. And the other thing is we want to get rid of the homeless. We want to take the homeless from the streets of San Francisco and Los Angeles and put them in these new super cities, which will have housing built for them and hopefully social and medical care that actually takes care of them and keeps them inside without having to do, you know, going back to the streets where, you know, they're leaning over zombies and doing drugs. We have a big plan to make California great again. But the problem is right now, our current governor, Mr. Newsom, just hasn't done a good job. He took a surplus. He made a deficit. He took a small homeless population and made it large. I mean, we need, you know, we have fires galore all the time now. We're living on edge. No one can afford anything. So I think it's really absolutely imperative that we have new leadership step in that's not really hard left. Someone that's centric, someone that can work with President Trump, someone that can actually reach out their arms and say, look, I'm here for the people. I'm not here to make political division. And this is something that our current governor hasn't done. And you can see the results. California, nobody's happy.
No, people are moving out in droves. Like even in Wisconsin here, we got like an influx of Californians coming in and buying lakefront properties at pennies on a dime to them because everything's so expensive in California. They call it Californicating, you know, and they're coming here and they're buying up the mansions for $1 million because they sold their 2-bedroom for 3 in California and LA. And they're leaving. They're going to Austin. They're going all over. They're going to Nashville, everywhere. People just want to get out of California because it is turning into something that is unbearably expensive. And the dream, the pipe dream of I think Beverly Hills and the movie industry has lost its glamour. I think since of all the transparency we've seen, the knowledge that's available on the internet, a lot of that has gone down. And I think what you're really seeing is the pillaging of the people there with these high taxes and, you know, their rights. It's always an experiment with the digital IDs, amongst other things. And these liberal towns are also ultra progressive that seem to violate these liberties and freedoms. And what's interesting is the Democrat Party used to be very about personal freedoms and liberties and freedom of speech amongst other things. And here it is, really working on the surveillance state. And it's, when you talk super cities, just for a moment here, like how would we pay for these super cities? And my also concern is I've heard these things about these super cities, these Toyota towns or, other things. And there's different ideas of having corporations run towns, which I believe is nothing new. That's happened in the past when, new cities grew up or came out that, you know, somebody comes along and they have a main industry and all the housing around there is, you know, supplied or built by the company. My concern is that corporatization is going to buy up all these super cities and that we're going to just be paying rent and having no private property. My big thing is I want to expand private property, but we're not really seeing that. We're seeing things like BlackRock come up and buy, you know, 50,000 single family homes. And that's concerning to me.
Well, I think in the super cities, I would certainly be amenable to considering kind of a moratorium on big giant corporations buying up all the housing. And that's something I've said publicly before, because I'm not a fan of BlackRock coming up and buying 20-30% of the suburbs that I live in. This doesn't make sense. And then jacking up the rents. I mean, the American dream is largely based on homeownership. So if you take that away, you've completely killed the dream. I mean, the dream is dead in many ways as it is. But I mean, you could at least try to revive, or at least pretend to try to revive it. But no one seems to be wanting to do that. So in these super cities, we would try to create, first off, we're looking at doing it on potentially state land. So the land itself wouldn't cost a thing, which would make the affordability factor of building these super cities dramatically lower. So you might, instead of having, you know, condos at $300,000-$400,000, they might be at $200,000, below the housing average in the United States. This might be a way for the average young person or just even normal middle-class person to own their own piece of property and be there. I agree, though. We got to be very careful that corporations don't step in and do it. At the same time, we have to be even more careful that the government doesn't try to control this and make it into the next L.A. or San Francisco, L.A. where they can't deal with their fires, or San Francisco where they can't deal with their homeless problem and some of their crime and break-ins in cars. I mean, who hasn't had their car broken into in San Francisco? So, I mean, you would have to have a very good balance, a careful balance. One thing I can promise you, though, is that I completely support homeownership. And the reason is it gives you a piece of the pie. Someone that owns something will protect that to their death. And that's why I like the idea of homeownership. So if you could make it, you know, somehow that people would own these super cities, just individuals, they would fight tooth and nail to keep it perfect, keep it clean, keep it running, keep it efficient, the kinds of things that we haven't seen in California in a long time.
Well, and it's also interesting you mentioned that the government has all that private property. They're the number one owner of private property, which they don't constitutionally, I don't think they legally can own private property. But if they did have it and there was no cost on it being on state property, I could see where corporations that did pay into it or pay usage tax could then use to support, let's say, universal basic income or something of that nature. Not that I'm completely bought into UBI. I think it could make people lazy. It could cause inflation. There's so many unanswered questions dealing with it, but what are we going to do with all the people that are slowly getting out of work? We got 3 minutes left, Zoltan. What are your thoughts on what we're going to do? I know that there's going to be new occupations and new areas of work, and there's going to be a lot of re-education needed for people in the future here.
Sure. Well, let me just speak right to the point. I don't believe that people are going to get new jobs because of AI and humanoid robots. They're just going to be plumbers. They're going to be able to do everything, and they're going to be super intelligent. So let's just forget that. I heard this last night from a congressperson I was meeting. They just think that the AI is going to create all these jobs. It's not. It's going to take them. So we need a platform that can provide so people don't pick up their pitchforks and just completely go crazy and cause riots. And our platform is a universal basic income. However, I have a tax-free, the only tax-free universal basic income. There's an enormous amount of federal land out there. We call it the federal land dividend. And we want to either lease or sell a lot of this land, and from those dividends pay people a universal basic income. And look, the universal basic income doesn't have to be huge at first. In California, if it's $500, that's a good, you know, benefit to people that are just making the ends meet. Eventually, we'd like it to make it to a living wage. But I don't want to be unrealistic. What I'm trying to say is if robots take your job and you can't get another one, you're going to need a universal basic income to stay afloat and feed your children.
Very interesting. Zoltan Isfahan, we have a minute left. Let listeners know where they can find out about more about you and how they can support you and what you got coming up.
Sure. Well, it's Zoltan Isfahan at 2026.com. I'm running for California governor as a Democrat. But like I said, just to remind your listeners, I am the most right of the left. And we have a huge amount of wonderful policy. And we didn't talk about the thing that I really love, building up the space industry. We're going to absolutely do that in California, try to get us to an age where it's like almost starting to look like Star Trek. We are at that age where it could be something amazing. But California has to bring in good people again and can't have people leaving. It needs to feed its people. needs to get a basic income. It needs to protect its privacy. So there are many things we can do, but you can find me all over online. But ZoltanEshvan2026.com is our main campaign website. And thanks for having me, Kristen. It's been awesome.
No problem, Zoltan. It's really important people know and have awareness of futuristic issues. We could talk all day between me and you. I know when we hung out in 2020, it seemed like the night never ended. So I'm blessed to have met you, and thank you for joining us and giving your viewpoints on the subject. By the way, for our listeners out there, you can find out more about me, Kristen T. Harris, at x.com/Kristen T. Harris, therundownlive.com. Find the podcast on Rumble. Find it on Spotify. Find it on iHeartRadio. And our guest, Zoltan Ishvan. You can find out more about him right on the InfoWars Twitter, as well as the Real Alex Jones Twitter. Go there, share the live links, and reach out to us. Feel free to send us a message. You guys have a good one. Till we meet again in another amazing episode of The War Room.
Right now on TheAlexJones.com, you get buy one, get one free for any supplement. That includes our incredible Ultramethylene Blue, either the tincture or the capsules, as well as the Shilajit gummies, the Colostrum Plus, the Bovine Colostrum Plus, the Irish Sea Moss gummies. I mean, there's a lot of really incredible stuff. I'm here in studio with Patrick Byrne. I know you're a big fan of the Ultramethylene Blue. Right now, that's buy one, get one free. All supplements, buy one, get one free. It's the Black Friday, came early, mega sale at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Plus, we have a new deal. It's the Hat of the Month Club, where you can sign up and get a new hat every month, which is very fun. Of course, Christmas is coming up, folks. It'll be here before you know it. So do your Christmas shopping for the info warriors in your life. Patrick, you still all hopped up on methylene blue?
I am. I pilfer a bottle every time I come. You guys pay me in methylene blue. When it's been more than 60 days since I've been here, I run out, I will absolutely notice within a few days. My life goes back to being a little more lethargic than I should, wanting to sleep in. And it's not like speed or something. This is something, it's just you feel healthier.
It's like a clean, smooth energy. It's not coffee where you're sort of jittery. It's just like, it's like putting super gasoline in your car rather than the regular stuff. It's subtle, but you notice it.
You do.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fights will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and at AJN Live. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.